You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go again. It is Eurobash episode 72.
72.
That is wild.
Wow.
It's happening and it's happening quickly. Join the fastest growing podcast in mixed martial arts. We just made that up there, actually. Like the
Eurobash
audio broccoli.
Audio broccoli.
And this better season of audio. Look, a big weekend of mixed martial arts again. And a bigger one just coming. We have Cage Warriors. In Manchester, the first time ever, with Jack Cartwright on the top of that card. A lot of Irish talent as well this weekend. And of course, Israel Adesanya versus Yoel Romero. Big weekend ahead. A lot of news, Noel. How are you getting on?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I'm not too bad. Busy week, as you said. Busier week ahead. Fun times in the world of mixed martial arts, my friends. I'm good.
Yeah, man. And we're coming up on a huge week, obviously. March 20th, 21st. This weekend, this month for European mixed martial arts is going to be huge, with Cage Warriors London, UFC London, and KSW 53 all happening within 2 days of each other. That is wild. That is going to be some fucking weekend.
It's great. I'll tell you what, we're in a lot better place than we were this time last year in terms of Irish mixed martial arts, definitely. Anyway, with all the big shows coming back into town, it's fantastic. What a time to be alive.
Yeah, I wonder how many Euro bashes are going to be completely dedicated to people just getting on here and calling for their shot on UFC Dublin. Because last week's episode, if we featured heavily, and on this week's episode, it will feature quite heavily as well.
We've lots of little chunks and nuggets as well of information, don't we, Pete?
Oh my God. It's a jam-packed episode. We're going to hear from Paul Felder, from Joseph Duffy, Noel with the two savage interviews this week, and of course I'll be talking to bantamweight Cage Warriors champion Jack Cartwright, a lad who I am terrified of and I'm glad I got to speak to, and Chris Fields, who might have a bit of a bomb to drop there.
Ooh,
later on.
El Storco Blanco returns.
I want to actually go by El Storco
Blanco. I asked him. Will he won't embrace it like this housewife's choice? What the fuck is that all about?
Yeah, I mean, stay with the killing. Or the housewife's choice is pretty funny though. Because that just happened one day. I was like, that's his name now. Yeah. Fair enough. Was that out of the Obama card or something?
It was. I think it was that one actually was supposed to be on.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
The poster there Chris gave me of the fight that never happened.
Against Liam McGeary.
Yeah.
He won the poster.
Yeah. Oh, it's actually a slick poster, isn't it?
It is indeed.
It is good. The guys can't see it. I was going to say, what do you think? But yeah, no.
Lovely poster.
Or not video.
Yeah, so come here. Let's take a quick look at these. The latest news headlines, and we're probably going to go into our first interview after this because we got a lot to get through this week. So, Ariel Helwani has reported that McGregor and Gaethje are in preliminary talks for a summer bout. Umar Nurmagomedov, 12-0, has signed for the UFC. He's fighting Hunter Azure at UFC 249, of course, when Habib is fighting Ferguson as well. Alexander Hernandez v. Islam Makhachev has been added to UFC 249 as well.
Fight.
That's the type of thing we've been waiting for Makhachev, I believe. And UFC are targeting a Kazakhstani card for June 13th, according to my good colleague Steve Morocco. Chris Fields will return to the Cage Warriors banner on April 18th. We'll be hearing from Chris later on today. Roberto Saldic will take on Marius Zaromskis at KSW 53 for his welterweight title. Zaromskis, of course, a Bellator legend. And how about this? You're not going to like this one, Bashers. Jose Aldo, not Peter Yan, will take on Henry Cejudo on May 9th for the bantamweight title, despite his two-fight skid.
What do you think of that?
I'll get there in a second.
Sorry.
Juan Adams has signed for Aries as well, which could be meaning that a potential date with our boy Rug could be set up down the line. That's a great opponent to have, though. I feel like they're doing great things, Aries, with their signings, getting in these names from the UFC, etc. We're going to talk about, do you know what, we'll go to our interview and we'll come back and we'll talk about Gaethje, the Gaethje McGregor story, and maybe Aldo. What do you think of that?
Phil,
is that okay with you, babes? I just don't want to hurt your feelings.
Perfect.
I don't want it to be nice and flowy. Do you want to introduce the first guest of the evening?
Who's our first guest?
I think you know.
Mr. Paul Felder. Caught up with Paul, what was it, today? I don't even know what day it is.
One of the most sought after interviewers in the sport at the moment, coming off that fantastic fight with Dan Hooker, where
incredible,
almost retired.
Yeah.
Mate, who knows?
It's, as I said, I think it's just, you know, a matter of Paul. It's that big fight, as he explains here, you know, might bring him back out. And obviously Dublin is looming large in August. Going to be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take it away. Always an absolute pleasure to speak with my next guest, coming off an absolute war and fight of the year contender against Dan Hooker in New Zealand. One of the most talked about men in mixed martial arts. Always a pleasure. Paul Felder, first of all, my buddy, how many donuts have you eaten this week? That's what I have to ask.
Man, today, Christine and Ashling, they went and they got donuts. She was coming over. And I was like, all right, we should go into this place, Yum Yum Donuts. It's in Pennsylvania. And it's probably about 45 minutes outside of the city. So I don't get to it too often, but it's out by where she lives and where Ashling is sometimes. And the donuts there, dude, they're big, they're filled, they're delicious. She got me 6 of them. I was like, all right, I'm going to eat a couple now. I'm going to go for a little long walk, get a little cardio in. Then I had all these interviews. You know, I had some interviews that I was trying to bang out with everybody. Get out there today to you guys. I kind of like had my week to recover. I ate 3. They went down easy, dude. And I was like, I'll have another one. And Ashling wanted to try this cherry pie filled one. It was like chocolate frosted with a cherry on top with cherry pie filling. So, you know, no sugar in it at all.
Daddy added.
So she takes like the tiniest bite. So I'm stuck with this massive filled donut, number 4. I was like, all right, screw it. I'm going for it. I ate that one. Then I had 2 more.
You pig.
And I was like, and I'll do one more and save one for. I ate all 6 of those filled donuts in probably about 30 minutes.
Jeez, you're like me with the Guinness, so I'm just the opposite way around with
it. Bro, I can't. It really is a problem, right? Because I crave it. I crave it, Niall. You know this. You've interviewed me during these weight cuts. You know that it's on my mind for 8 weeks, 9 weeks, maybe even 10 weeks for this fight where I really was disciplined for a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
So, dude, now that I'm off the chain, the fight was epic. Like, I'm proud of myself, even though we didn't get the win. But, like, I know I put in work. I just can't help it. I keep saying the next day you're going to be better. And I will. Like, the one day I woke up, I had 3 eggs, some oatmeal. I was like, yeah, good breakfast, some coffee. I was like, let's go. Then I just start, like, crushing candy throughout the day. And it's like, stop. What are you fucking doing?
I'm going to ask you about that in a moment. Obviously, you know, you mentioned the possibility of retiring. We'll speak about that in a sec. But I have to ask you about the fight, first of all. I scored it rounds 2, 4, and 5 for you. There was a lot of people, literally majority of people, I think, even online and in the media world, scored the fight for you. Just your thoughts on the fight. Were you obviously, you were disappointed. I know you had it scored for yourself. Just your thoughts on the judge's decision.
Yeah, man. It's just, again, another case where... Let me start with, it was a super close fight, right? We all know that it was competitive as hell. Dan's as tough as they come, and congratulations to him. I'm not taking anything away from him. I'm not going to fight the decision. It's not worth it. It was close enough where I can't complain. But that being said, you know, Dan thinks he won the fight. He talked about it on different interviews, and I feel like I won the fight. Like you said, I feel I did enough in round two. I think I dominated the striking. He had my back for like a second, did nothing with it. And then four and five, the championship, the later rounds, I turned it up. I had a better cardio, and I feel like I put a stamp on it. And I feel like I lost on one judge's scorecards, took away round five because of that takedown. But we talked about in the current rules, a takedown with zero damage and zero positional changes. Well, you know, we were scrambling. There was never any real dominant moment, and I got back up to my feet. Now, granted, not in an amazing position, but no damage was done. So you look at the rest of the round for that. I thought I had done enough, lost some money, but I got the bonus. So, I mean, that made things a lot better, obviously, than just getting my show purse. But it was still an amazing experience, dude, like to go in there, walk through that crowd.
Born
in the USA, blazing on the radio.
I want to ask you about that, actually, the walkout, because it was obviously, you know, Grand Control to Major Tom. Tom was your dad, your late father, and then you went into to Born in the USA. Was that all linked towards your dad?
Definitely the Space Oddity was all for my dad. And I just knew that would get me in the right head spot. You know, I got his ashes, like I'm with my team. And then I just wanted to come out to something for us, for the USA. You know, it's like I'm over in this guy's backyard and all these people are so gung-ho about New Zealand and Auckland and being representing their country. I felt like I was doing mine a disservice if I didn't come out there and kind of rep it a little bit. And it got me pumped, man, to come out to that song with screaming Kiwis in my face. It was like, it was raw.
It was one of those, you know, spine tingling moments. One of my favorite songs. You know, I love Bruce Springsteen as well. I have to ask you before we move it on a bit. You know, I don't know how you feel about this. Maybe you start fights a little bit too slow. Do you feel that's an issue? Because you always seem to come into fights in the second, late second round, third round. You seem to be at your peak.
Yeah, I don't know why, right? And that's one of the things we really worked on, too. And I was doing really well in sparring. I was getting my game plan going right away, which was to be aggressive, as you guys saw, which was to get in his face, close that distance, try to work the body. And Dan did a really good job of evading, and I did a really poor job in the beginning of following him, right? And I yell about it to fighters all the time when I'm commentating. So I can take myself out of the equation when I watch it and see that I thought I was cutting him off in the moment, but I see that I'm leaving so much octagon space. Once I started bridging that gap, and you can see Duke being the genius that he is, he's all over that. He's like, big steps to your left, big steps to your left. He's escaping out the side. But at that point, I'd already given up the first round. You know, and I was like, God damn it, here we go. But, you know, I won the second. And so, yeah, I gotta work on that. If, you know, when I come back, when that big fight comes up, which I feel like the UFC is going to give us something cool to get me back in there.
We'll talk about that in a moment. I have a few suggestions, obviously, to throw your way. You mentioned retirement, Paul. You know, you've just said there you're looking for the big fights, the main events, the five rounders. Is that the only reason or only chance we'll see of you competing in the octagon again?
Yeah, man, I think so. I think at this point, it's got to be something exciting, right? And I'm not saying that I'm maybe deserving of a million of those, but if you're going to get me back, I feel like I'm willing to wait around for a little bit. I'm in no rush. I took some good damage in that fight. It was a 5-round decision. So, you know, obviously Dublin is something I've reached out and said that the Duke's made it pretty clear that we'd love that. Yeah. That's pretty quick turnaround for me, but for that card, I would love to do it, man. You know, to go and fight in Ireland would just be so much fun, dude. You know, obviously I'm the Irish Dragon. I've got the ancestry going back to them, and I could sit here and get my Uncle Mark and my Uncle Jack on here and tell you every lineage in town, where we're from, and all that kind of nonsense. Even though some people think I'm just a
We'll do that after. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Conor McGregor put up an Instagram post. He said, "Felder's German, you stupid twat." Why is Conor McGregor constantly in your ear? Like, you know, he said it obviously after his fight against Donald Cerrone. Now again, what did you make of that that jibe on Instagram?
Man, I just think he's aware of the division. You know, I think he comes after anybody. He puts feelers out on it. On anything, you know, he's a he's a businessman in that way, where he wants to be alpha dog, right? That's his way of kind of being the boss, right? Making comments to anybody and everybody. I don't think it meant too much. He deleted it afterwards. And
Did he delete it? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he deleted it. I didn't jump on that bait because it was literally, I had just gotten out of the sauna, cut like 7 pounds. We were close to weigh-ins. I was going to lay down until we had to go and cut the last half pound. So it was like, as exciting as that is to have, you know, one of the biggest stars kind of call you a twat on social media, I didn't want to make the mistake that so many people would have of addressing that right then and there.
Fair.
And taking any respect away from Dan Hooker, who obviously deserved every bit of my attention for that fight.
Definitely. Now, that's totally fair enough. I've got to ask as well, the injuries. Obviously, there's, you know, that long list again. You got pretty badly beaten up. I believe there was an issue with your eye, your shin, your liver as well, you've spoken about. How serious was all that?
So the eye, there's a couple little orbital floor fractures, which happen quite more often than a lot of the casual fans probably know about. Anytime we're breaking our nose and stuff, a lot of times you get the orbital floor. It's the small bones that go under your eye. They're like eggshells. They crack quite often. So the way everything's looking right now, it looks like I won't need any kind of plates or surgery. Everything will heal on its own. It'll be like an 8-week no contact type of situation. My ankle is still really sore just because of the calf kicks and kicking him. And my feet always swell after fights and traveling. So, you know, and then you go and eat 3,000 calories worth of donuts in one sitting. You swell up a bit. But other than that, I'm good. I had a little crazy scare with some rhabdo, which is like a kidney, can be like a
overexertion of the kidneys
thing of the kidneys, because it's your muscles start breaking down and producing this stuff that gets into your blood and your kidneys work to filter it out.
Wow, how serious? That sounds really serious.
It can be really serious, but luckily it was right after the fight and I was in the emergency room. So the way you get rid of it is you have to hydrate and rest like a maniac. So I basically was put on like 5 bags of IVs throughout the 24 hours that I was in the hospital.
And did they tell you about any serious implications that may have had?
No, as long as they were checking my kidney function the whole time. They kept taking my blood to see if it was going down. And that's why they eventually released me, because they flushed it enough where my kidneys were operating. I stayed hydrated. I've been staying hydrated since I left the hospital. Haven't really been drinking too much or anything like that, because obviously I was worried about my kidneys. So that was the only problem with getting done a huge fight and wanting to drink beers. It was like, I'll wait on that.
Would that have a knock-on effect to anywhere else in your body if, you know, obviously if you're swelling up after a fight or anything like that and your kidneys aren't functioning?
Well, that was their worry, was letting me go out of there and having this stuff still affecting my kidneys. But once I was showing that everything was getting operational and functioning, it was my urine was completely clear by the time I was leaving there. And to clear it up, some people think that it was during my weight cut. I didn't have it during my weight cut. I had it post fight.
Okay.
So it was from the exertion of the fight, and they were worried that it could have been from my calf getting a compartment syndrome, which is when the swelling is too much for your body to be able to handle.
Wow.
And what happens is if it swells past what it can handle, your body will actually just start strangulating the muscles to stop the swelling, in which case it'll kill the muscle in your body. So
they could have been looking at cutting off your leg.
Well, yeah. Well, one of the ways they deal with it is they actually slice open your muscles in giant slices to relieve the tension and then sew them back up when the inflammation goes down.
Wow.
And I didn't want that at all, as you can imagine. So I was elevating it, icing it like crazy. And they didn't think I had it, but they wanted to keep me overnight to monitor that. Because any time that you get that stuff going into your kidneys, they were thinking that it could also be from compartment syndrome. But it looked like it was more like a rhabdo type, just overexertion, breakdown of my muscles naturally from that, as opposed to like one serious. So I didn't end up having compartment syndrome,
thankfully. What, you know, I have to ask you this as well. You know, How bad is the come down after fight week? You know, win, lose or draw. It's something people I don't think often think about when they speak to fighters on a regular basis, or you know, any sort of fans looking on at the sport. It must be very, very difficult, regardless of the result.
It's tough. It's tough, man. You almost get this, and all the fighters kind of talk to each other because they know, right? They're like, how you feeling? This is even if you've won. Yeah. You know, a lot of times they'll be like, hey, how you holding up? Because it's so much and so much raw emotion and relief and stress and excitement, and then it's over, right? Yeah. And it's now about the pay-per-view this weekend. It's you're kind of you're old news very quickly in the sport of mixed martial arts. But I feel like I'm getting pretty good at that, and I love the attention. I love being, but then when it's over, I go back to to Philly and out just outside of the city in my little townhouse with my daughter and my, you know, family. And it's like, I'm just kicking it on the couch, you know? So I've learned to kind of be really low key when I'm not in the spotlight.
Obviously, you know, we hope that doesn't prolong too often. You know, does it prolong sometimes?
It can. Like, I've had them where they really, like the Mike Perry fight with the broken arm, just when you have constant reminders of it, or the lung injury with James Vick, those ones are tougher to overcome. But at least this one already, like, my face is healing up, my leg is healing up, I'm walking around, you know, so I feel like I'm going to move on much quicker from this one. And it was, I did my job, man, you know, like, my biggest concern with that was getting this main event, having the UFC finally trust me, Dana White, Sean Shelby giving me this opportunity that I've been begging for. And then the fear as you get closer and closer to it is, what if I shit the bed? You know what I mean? What if I go out there and Dan Hooker knocks me out in 30 seconds? And we see it happen, right, to the best guys in the world. And it's just, that shit's a reality. And that's what wears on you the whole time, no matter how prepared you are, no matter how good you are. You just, you don't want to blow it. And sometimes we do.
I'll tell you what, you certainly did. And that's going to be, you know, this. It'd be a very good fight, you know, if someone knocks that off for fight of the year. For me, it was an incredible display from both yourself and Dan. So, like, you certainly didn't shit the bed on that occasion.
Exactly. So that in that regard, I'm happy. And I feel like I did enough to win the fight, but I left it close enough where it was away. So I can't really do too much complaining about it. You know, it's just, it sucks. Yeah. You know, I would be in a different position if I had won that fight, but I feel like,
to win.
I did enough to prove that, you know, to win. And but I feel like I've guaranteed myself at least another chance to have another main event spot before I'm officially retired.
Totally agreed. What did Dana White say to you? Have you spoken to him or Sean Shelby or Mick Maynard or anyone directly?
I haven't talked directly to Dana yet, but I did talk to Sean right after the fight. First thing he said is, don't go retiring on me right after the fight. And we talked about the fight and just how much he loved it. And I asked him, you know, before they announced it, I was like, fight of the night. And he's like, yeah, like the no brainer for that. And then he sent me a really nice text message. Just, you know, I won't say any of the details, but not pushing me one way or the other, just thanking me for what had happened. And, you know, if I just decide to be a dad and hang it up, then he supports me, but that he's got some interesting things that he's going to want to be calling me about in the future. And hopefully you pick up that call, so to say.
We've mentioned it, UFC Dublin, and the online traction was absolutely huge. You know, loads of Irish fans, a lot of our listeners here in Eurobash. The general theme, and I think 90% of the people who've talked about UFC Dublin have mentioned one name and one name only to headline that event, and that is you, Paul Felder. You know, what would that mean to you to fight in front of the loudest crowd in the world here in Dublin, Ireland, as a headline?
Well, man, I feel like that's one of those bucket list things that I got to check off now. You know, I've invaded all these countries where everybody's out to have me lose. It'd be nice to go to one where I feel like I got a lot of support and a lot of fan base to go there and rock that house over in Dublin, man. And maybe rock some green shorts for that one would be a dream come true for sure, man. To just smell the beer spilling in that place would be out of control.
because Duke is so keen for it to happen. You know, Duke added me in a group text message with you, making sure you came on and did everything possible in your power to get that position on the card. You know, they don't come along every day. We know that. We haven't had a UFC here in 5 years. You said it's a bucket list moment. Would it be an emotional moment? You know, could that be the one where you know, maybe fight in Dublin and then maybe walk away from the sport? Would you look at it as something like that?
I don't know. I feel like after the energy of fighting in Dublin, it would just make me want to keep on fighting, especially if I can get another win. Then, you know, as long as we're moving up the ladder and progressing and making money and staying in the top 10, the top five, you know, that's what's keeping me around. If I ever feel like I'm becoming a journeyman or I'm fighting the guys on the lower rungs and they're kind of working me out, that's when I'll retire, when I feel like I'm not the marquee, you know what I mean? When I'm feeling like I'm not the guy selling the fight, then it's time to be done.
Listen, it sounds to me as if you're nowhere near done by what you're saying here.
I just need some donuts and a couple beers and get a little fat and start shaming myself. And then when I start shaming myself, I start working out hard, and then I'll want to fight, and I'll be hounding my manager nonstop to let me know what's next. That's usually how it works. I'm always thinking these things after a loss. It's just, I you know, it was the main event. I got to speak after the fight, so I was emotional. So a lot of stuff came out that's kind of always on my mind anyway. You know, as a almost 36-year-old athlete who's taken some big injuries, I feel like we're all always wondering, you know, when is the last one?
I don't think you realize how popular you are in Ireland. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, because you say that to me, and then, you know, the only times I really see too much stuff is whenever Connor says something, and then I get all the his fans and all the negativity. So I feel like, unfortunately, the real supporters over there get kind of washed away by the haters.
I think you did yourself a lot of favors that time in Belfast. You were very, very gracious with your time and with a lot of the fans. I think a lot of people sort of warmed you in Belfast, and I think you were buying beers for everyone as well at the bar in Belfast. But listen to me. You know, that's something I think everyone here would love to see, Paul Felder in a headline event in Dublin, definitely, because we don't have any, you know, too many names here in the UFC at the moment in Ireland. But I got to ask you, you know, what has Christine said? What has, you know, Duke said about you continuing fighting? Do they still, does your mum, Marion, do they still want you to fight on? Well, what's their feelings?
Everybody in my life at this point is okay with either way. My mom probably more okay with me hanging it up than anybody else, obviously. Obviously, my coaches think I still have a lot left. Duke is more pissed off than anybody I know about this fight. He, you know, he's upset. He thinks that, you know, we pulled it off and we had a great performance, as well as I do. But that's my coach's job, right? He's got my back. They're getting pissed off for me, so I can just kind of let it be what it is. But I'd say the majority of people don't think that I'm done.
Well, do you think that you're done? You know, I know you're going to disagree with me now when I say this, but, what, you know, once a fighter does start mentioning retirement, a lot of times you sort of go, you know, maybe he should retire, no?
Yeah, of course, but I think it depends on what kind of performances that athlete is putting on, right? I feel like if you're getting knocked out multiple times in a row and you're starting to talk about retirement, you should most definitely retire. I mean, we're talking, I was coming off of a win streak and arguably won the fight in a 5-round main event. It's like, well, that could be a little premature. But in the moment, I was just upset. You know, I was disappointed, and I missed my daughter. I wanted to get home, and, you know, I kind of got caught up in that limelight a little bit and wore my emotions on my sleeve a little too much.
I think, you know, we did speak about this off air before we came on. I think people, sometimes it's very easy to forget what you guys go through in the journey before the fight, getting there. You know, I'm in regular contact with you. I know how much weight you have to cut. It's not a you know, a 3-month process. It's a 3-month bloody diet where you have to eat very, very sensibly and carefully. Is that something maybe you feel as though the fans would, and maybe media in general, just take that on board when they're speaking to guys, that, you know, these guys go through a lot, a huge amount for our entertainment, effectively?
Yeah, especially the guys that cut significant weight. You know, it's not only do I have to train, you know, I train most days, 5 days, 5 days a week. I train 3 times a day and then once or twice on Saturday. But, it's a bitch, man. Yeah. Mm. It's a whole two plus month diet where I'm not cheating, man. You've seen these meals like every day. It's not like on Saturday I'm like, I dieted really good this week, I'm going to go have a couple cheat meals. It's like, no, there's a cheat meal to me would be like if I let myself have a tablespoon of peanut butter that I wasn't supposed to have in my macros that day. It's I'll be wearing that shit in the morning, you know what I mean? Or I'll be looking even more muscular in the morning because I went and had too many carbs the night before. And it's a science project to do it where I feel healthy. And this weight cut was miraculous.
Yeah, Ilarios did a great job.
Did a great job. But even then, the day of weigh-ins, I still cut 7.5 pounds.
Shit.
Because it was a Friday night weigh-in, so I woke up and I had, it was like a little over seven pounds cut. So it wasn't like, oh, it was such a good weight cut, he only cut a couple pounds. It was like, and then I still cut 6.5 or whatever it was, and then I thought I would float the rest on the way to the weigh-ins. I still had to get to the sauna at the hotel and cut 0.5 pound. So it was like,
it doesn't happen. In future, I'm going to give you a little bit more leeway when you're grumpy as fuck with me in the build-up to fight week, because I know how tough it is for you guys, and we do appreciate what you guys do. Listen to me, just a couple more before I let you go, and I do appreciate the time as always, Paul.
Of course.
What is next, dude? Like, you know, is there a name there? You know, Ally Quint is a guy I know you've mentioned. He's mentioned you. There's a whole host of names in that 155-pound division. I'm presuming you want to get on that Dublin card, as you said. Is Ally akin to the man that fancies your tickle?
I like that fight, right? That fight was supposed to happen. I know Duke wants a rematch, and I would like that too, but I don't see that happening. I think, obviously, the way that the UFC is going to go, Dan did get the win, and it was all fair and square, so I feel like he's going to end up fighting Poirier, and that leaves Conor, Gaethje, and Cowboy above me, and obviously I'm not fighting Cowboy. I don't see Gaethje wanting that fight, especially if I'm coming off a loss. So it really limits what I'm obviously I want those bigger names, but I don't see myself getting those bigger names just because that's just how the cookie crumbles in this sport. And Al came right out and said that, you know, he wanted that fight. And I feel like that's a fight that gets me excited just because that's something the fans have wanted. He brings it every single time. I bring it. You give us a main event somewhere, we're going to.
What do you mean somewhere? What do you mean somewhere? Come on.
But exactly. You keep pushing for it. I want it. I'll take it. But we'll see what happens, right?
Paul, listen, it's always a pleasure to speak to you, and I do appreciate the time. And I know it's obviously been a tough week for you, and, you know, wonderful fight. And if you do decide to call a day, it doesn't seem like you are. It's been an absolute pleasure. I always appreciate the time, my friend.
No, thanks for having me, man. You know I always got time for you, bro.
Always a pleasure to have Paul Felder on the show.
El Dragano Irlandese.
Yes. Oh, is that that's how you say the Irish dragon?
I don't fucking know. I'm not Spanish.
Jesus, that was very impressive.
It's you know, I think as well we have to sort of mention the online traction and, you know, weight behind the fan support for Paul.
Oh, he's in a better place than ever, even though he's coming off a loss.
Yeah, and I think everyone, like, did you see the post he put out about UFC Dublin? I'm due a trip to Dublin soon.
Yeah, yeah.
The amount of traction, man, and Irish fans actually commenting on that, saying, we want you to headline, we want you to headline, we want you to headline.
Irish pubs just ordering crates of Guinness as soon as they see this. Jesus Christ.
But even, like, I went across the road there last night for a few jars, and even the barman, he wouldn't be mad into UFC, one of the owner, he was going, oh, geez, that fight was unbelievable with Paul and Dan. He watched it online and... Legally, I hope, but it was an incredible fight. And, you know, if Paul's considering retiring, listen, best of luck to him. He's had a fantastic career, and he's, I tell you what, one tough son of a bitch.
Really. Absolutely. Let's talk about this Ariel Helwani reporting last week that McGregor and Gaethje are in preliminary talks for a summer bout. Dana White still seems to be keen on the Nurmagomedov fight, which seems weird with them fighting in April, right? How do you feel about it? Do you like the Gaethje fight?
No, I don't know. I think it's a big risk for Conor and his stock, you know, if he is to go in and fight Gaethje and lose to Gaethje. I still think we're more likely to see Conor at 170 pounds until that rematch, or potential rematch against Khabib happens. Obviously, if Tony wins, I think they'll do Conor Tony. But I just don't see. I think there's an awful lot for him to lose if he fights at 155 and loses. You know, he's not going to get that title shot if he loses to Gaethje. I wouldn't be surprised Kavanaugh if it's 170.
Kavanaugh was asking for 170 straight after the Cerrone fight. I mean, I don't see the problem with it. Like, I mean, they're going to give him a title fight when they want to anyway. You know, like.
But if he loses to Gaethje, they won't.
Oh, no, absolutely not. But I think, is it a more winnable fight than the likes of Masvidal, who was pushed around a lot in the immediate aftermath of Cerrone and beforehand? Because I'm hearing it both ways. I'm hearing McGregor fans saying this is a perfect matchup for Conor. I'm hearing Gaethje fans saying this is a perfect matchup for Gaethje.
I agree. Yeah, that has been branded around a lot.
But I'm like, which one fucking is it, lads?
Well, I just think he's at a stage now where you know.
I love the fight, by the way. Like, I mean, in terms of two guys, two animals that like tough dudes who are savage strikers. I mean, it would be a spectacle.
Oh, it'd be a deadly fight, but like, I'm just thinking, is there too much to lose for Conor there in terms of going forward for a big money fight? Like, let's be honest, I think if he fights, you know, obviously if Khabib beats Tony Ferguson, like, that's going to be the biggest fight ever. And like, the amount of people that are going to tune in for that, I think that's going to break any record in terms of pay-per-view sales. No, Khabib and Conor, if a rematch does happen, if Khabib can get over Tony, which I think a lot of people are writing off Tony. It's just very,
I don't know.
It's very bizarre. They're just looking past.
You can understand why people are like favoring Nurmagomedov based on what he's done, though.
Yeah, Tony's going to beat him though.
I know. You and Sean Al-Shadi have been sticking by these guns for a long time. But what I wanted to say to you was,
what did you want to say to me?
The fact that you're saying like money fights, etc. I think the Cerrone fight proved that Conor doesn't really need to fight, you know, a select few people to make money. I mean, if he's clearing a million pay-per-views with that ESPN thing in place against Cerrone, I think he does a million against.
Well, no, I think there was a difference with that Cerrone fight. I think
the comeback, etc.
Yeah, people
want the intrigue.
Exactly. People wanted to see, is Conor back? Is this the Conor of old back? And I don't know if you're going to get that against, you know, the likes of Justin Gaethje or someone like that. People just might have a passing casual interest and not go ahead and purchase the pay-per-view.
If Ferguson wasn't fighting for the title, it would be Gaethje though. Like, I mean, he is right there, I feel.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I totally agree with you. But
so by beating him, like, I mean, there's no argument.
Yeah, but I still don't know if he's going to do that. I would not be surprised if we, like, I'd still.
You would see Rappaport and Cotton Wool and wait for the result.
That's what my whole thing is along the lines of that. And I think if he goes to 170, if he fights at 170, he loses at 170, there's no stock lost. At 155, there is.
Right, so, but the problem is, right, if they want him fighting in summer, Khabib's not going to fight in the summer.
Yeah,
Ramadan.
Yeah, I know.
So,
I think it's more likely going to be end of the year.
September.
Yeah, why not? Like, he's not going to fight six times in the year like he said he is. Anyway, we know that's not going to happen. Do you know what I mean? So
he did three times.
I think we'd be lucky to get Conor in twice this year. You know,
get him once. Two more times is not crazy for me.
Not crazy, but I think realistically, once more.
What about summer Gaethje, and then in September, October, or November?
Well, I'll tell you what's happened. Usman has gone very quiet on this whole potential match against Masvidal. No? Has that not sort of died down, petered out?
Yeah, well, I guess my whole thing with that was Dana White said, you know, oh, it's definitely happening in the summer. And I foolishly was like, all right, it's happening in the summer. And I forgot all about it. You know what I mean? I just went, yeah, that's happening in the summer.
I think that's more, you know, I would not be surprised if Conor wants to go for that, the Usman fight in the summer.
Really, yeah.
For the third title, like, if you think of what that would do for him, you know, Conor loves chasing records.
Yeah.
We've always said this, you know, he talked about Donald Cerrone, you know, the amount of head kick knockouts he had, and for him to do that, I think it was the first time ever Donald was finished in that manner.
And you believe if he loses to Usman for the 170 title,
takes
he could
no stock,
come back and fight a 55 title?
Exactly. That's 100% my point. And I think if you look at the Usman fight as well, like, there's a good bit of beef there between those two. You know, Conor,
the whole tweet situation.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. And obviously he said, you know, he was the state of him. He goes when he was sitting cage side after he beat Donald. There's a bit of shit there, obviously, with the agent as well. Ali Abdelaziz, there's no love lost there. And I just think if, you know, he was to go in and win that 170-pound title, imagine 170-pound champion against 155-pound champion. It would be some story for the end of the year.
Is that what you do if you're UFC?
If that's what I do from the UFC, yeah. I think it just adds more stock to what Conor is already.
No, it's interesting. I'm happy enough with the Gaethje route, but that is an interesting take without a doubt. Let's talk about Jose Aldo getting drafted in ahead of our boy.
Now, how do you feel about that?
I'm very upset about it. I've talked about this a bit with Casey Lloyd and Jose Youngs. I understand.
Who's he?
The host of the A-Side. Check it out every Wednesday, 6 p.m. Irish time. But the thing is, Yoel Romero's fighting Israel Adesanya this weekend. Yoel Romero has lost two fights, but there is no other person at 185 where everyone's like, he should be fighting for the title. This is ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? Like, why isn't this guy fighting for the title? Jan is that guy. Aljamain Sterling is that guy at 135. I just don't feel like, more I've thought about this, I just don't feel like they do that unless they're going to Sao Paulo in May, you know?
Yeah, listen, I would have liked to see Peter Yan myself. I think that, you know, he basically decided what he wanted to do against Uriah Faber at any given time and moment. It was like he was toying with Uriah in
that
fight.
We knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, but I didn't really expect it to be in the manner which it
had the star-making power, though, right? That fight was huge 100%. In terms of fighting Uriah Faber.
And I think, you know, what it comes down to, again, as well with the UFC, and maybe you haven't thought about this, but I certainly thought about it. You know, maybe it's the English language. Maybe that's why they're holding his push back. You know?
He has done very well, though, right? We've been noticing he's getting better. He has sentences. But, I mean, in the space of a year, when you're also competing five times in the UFC, I imagine that it's pushed
well,
to the back
of
the
queue. It was very similar with Habib. You know, Habib did not get that initial push until he learned the language of English. Like, that's, I think that's pretty fair to say. Like, he was, you know, gradually, you know, fighting guys like Pat Healy, and then it was like Daryl Horch or all these guys. So that could definitely be a line of thought with the UFC. Give him six more months, get a better grasp of the language, and maybe push him. That is true. I think Jose can. It's just not arsed. It does make sense. It was like Anderson Silva, like, you know what I mean? He let Ed Suarez talk for him because he just couldn't be fucking arsed asking questions, answering questions. I think that's basically it. But yeah, listen, in fairness to Jose, he did beat Marlon Moraes. Like, I don't know how anyone scored that fight for Marlon Moraes. Jose won it for me. So I'm not totally over the hill, but I think Peter's a lot of time as well. He's young.
Is fighting Aldo for the belt a bigger fight than fighting Henry Cejudo for the belt? Say Aldo comes in and beats. So, it might work out, right?
Yeah.
Because he does need fights against established names. And although Cejudo's done a great job of making himself a bigger name.
He's an idiot, though. I don't like the guy.
Look, you say this, and then you're like, I don't understand people getting so upset with Kobe Covington.
Yeah, I know. I get it. He's a dickhead, though. But I get it. Yeah, I do get it.
Harsh. Let's go to a man who nobody has really ever described as a dickhead, I'm sure. Joseph Duffy, one of the nicest men in the world. We have not seen him for a long time since that fight with Diakese last March, I believe. Was that last March?
Yeah, London.
Yeah. So we're going to have a word with Joe. It seems to be the theme of this week's episode is they all want to get on this
Dublin card.
This Dublin card. But very interesting with Joe, obviously, because he had been in that spot before against Dustin Poirier. It seemed like the world was opening up in front of Joseph Duffy, but unfortunately, an injury then ruled him out of it. Noel talked to him earlier this week, and we're going to hear from Joe, and we'll be back to talk about what happened last weekend.
It's been a while since I've spoken and caught up with this man all the way out there in Montreal in Canada. I think his last bout was about this time last year at UFC London, or coming up to it, when he dropped a decision against Mark Giacchese. It is the wonderful and charming Mr. Joseph Duffy. Joseph, how are you, my friend? Always good to catch up. How's everything in Montreal? I believe you're snowed in.
Oh, Jesus, for a while, but there's snow here now. All good other than that. Sick of shoveling.
I think we've lots to catch up on about Joe. A lot of people, obviously, talking about you this week after the announcement. I think it was about 10 days ago of UFC Dublin. They're eager to know where Mr. Joseph Duffy's at. What's been going on in Canada, Joe?
Not a pile. Just, you know, obviously recovering from a prolonged injury and just trying to get back into the groove of thing, you know. Starting to feel good. I've been able to put some consistent training in now, and, you know, things are clicking back into place. So I'm excited to get back out there.
I don't know if you want to talk about it, but what was the injury? What was the issues? And I know you've been, you know, obviously I've been in touch with you a little bit, and it's been kind of frustrating for you in terms of not being able to really go at it in the gym.
That's it. Yeah, I had the rib injury that I injured. I think it was, November 2018. I was meant to fight in Australia, and the rib put me out. And it's just been kind of dragging on since. So like every time I would train, I would kind of, if I got hit in it, it would put it back to square one. Wrestling was an issue. Grappling was an issue, certain movements. And I just found like I would start training, then I would get injured, start training. And I just felt like I was digging myself out of a hole all the time. You know, I couldn't get consistent. So I went out to the PI. Heather was working on me out there. You know, she's one of the physios in the PI. You know,
Heather Linden,
incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. You know, she's always great. And she gave me a bit of advice. So I got some prolotherapy and that helped. And, you know, I'm just trying to train smart and look after it. And so far, so good. So, you know, if it keeps going this way, great.
Did it affect you in there against Marchie Casey? Because, like, I'm going to be honest, you know, I thought it was a very underwhelming performance from you. And you were a long way away probably from your best in that fight.
It was a very underwhelming performance, that's for sure. Like, I definitely wasn't myself in there. Like, I'm not somebody who likes to blame injuries. You know, like, Mark's game plan was great. You know, he came out, he took my leg away, so I think that played a big part too. But in terms of camp, it didn't help. You know, I injured it maybe 5 weeks before the fight, so I couldn't do no live work. You know, wrestling. Or striking or sparring or nothing, you know. It was just a case of pad work and conditioning. And like I said, like I'm not blaming that, saying that's the reason I lost, because Mark came up with a good game plan. But, you know, maybe that's why my timing was a little bit off. Like I felt like I was seeing the shots, but like I wasn't reacting well, you know.
And how are you now, Joseph? Is everything good now, and are you looking to get back in there?
Yeah, everything's great. Like I said, I've been getting some consistent training, and like my weight's good, and you know, I'm happy to be back in the gym, which is always a big positive. So without a doubt, like as soon as I seen that Ireland card, like my eyes lit up, because after getting pulled from the last one, you know, it's something that's really haunted me. You know, like I want to get that fight on home soil, especially like UFC Dublin. Is, you know, it's a landmark event.
We'll talk about that more in a second. I've got to obviously ask you as well, you know, you've become a dad since then, you've little Laura. I know your life's changed obviously a drastic amount. You've been on text to me saying you want 20 more, but listen to me, does your perspective change once a kid comes into the mix as well? Is that fair to say? Because, you know, I often speak with Paul Felder and a lot of the other lads who've kids, and it seems to sort of mellow them out a little bit in terms of, you know, their fighting career.
Yeah, your perspective definitely changes. Obviously, your priorities change too. Like pretty much since I was a kid, like I remember in my teenage years fighting, I was obsessed, you know, that's all I'd done was train. Like I didn't go out too much. Like I was just always in the gym, and it got more and more serious as I stepped up in level. So you know, when a kid comes on the scene, like it kind of, fighting no longer becomes your priority, you know, which is something that was strange for me.
Definitely. And she's a very cute kid as well. Very cute kid.
But maybe she's not mine. I don't know. I don't know where she got that from, but yeah.
Joseph,
I'll have to keep an eye on the mailman.
quality. Joseph, I have to ask you, obviously, you mentioned there, you know, yourself, that's haunted you. You know, I remember speaking to you in Dublin literally moments after the announcement was made, and, you know, it was a terrible weekend to see you so upset. So you were sort of listless, I think, going around Dublin, the three arena. I know how much that fight obviously meant to you at the time. Talk to me more about that. Is it about redemption, you know, coming back and actually fighting in the three arena under the UFC's banner and righting those wrongs that happened?
That's part of it, without a doubt, you know, because, you know, you fight it all over the world, like MSG or the O2, like these kind of landmark arenas, but it doesn't compare, you know. Fighting on home soil, hearing the crowd on that night, and knowing, you know, it would have been my first main event under the UFC's banner, and obviously a quality opponent, you know, against awesome. Dustin Poirier. It was a fight that people was excited for, and a fight I was excited for. So So without a doubt, like, it's about righting them wrongs, and you know, I would do anything to get on that card, you know. I want to fight on the UFC in Ireland, and I just want to feel that atmosphere, because, you know, watching it from the crowd, yeah, it was incredible but heartbreaking at the same time, because I felt like I should be in the octagon feeling this, you know.
I feel, and obviously knowing you know considerably well over the years, and you know, I've on text to you quite regularly, and we speak quite a lot. I feel as though maybe this has really sort of lit a fire, lit some smoke. It's really sort of maybe rejuvenated you to appoint the announcement of this card, that you really just want to go for it, and you just really want to bloody get back in there. Has it lit fire in your belly?
Without a doubt, you know, just like I said, like, to right that wrong and just to feel that atmosphere and something to be excited about. How can I not be excited about that event, that show in Ireland, especially after going through fight week thinking I was fighting, yeah, and then, you know, to get the news on the Wednesday night, I'm pretty much on weight. I'd done a whole camp, and, you know, it was a very empty feeling. Whereas now, I got a chance to feel that again, but actually for it to happen, you know.
You know, obviously it's a long way out. It's a number of months yet. But I sort of have to ask you this one as well. You're obviously under Dominance MMA, under Ali Abdelaziz, you know, his management team. Do you think being under Ali and being under his management puts you in a strong position to get a prominent position on this card?
I hope so. You know, Ali's incredible. Like, just if you spend a day with him and you see how hard he works for his fighters, then, you know, I think it would change a lot of opinions, a lot of people's opinion, because he really does work so hard for his fighters, and he really does back them regardless. You know, win, lose or draw, he's in their corner. And I'm sure, like, as soon as I seen an announcement, I text Ali to try and get on the card, and I'm sure he'll do everything in his power to get me on there.
Yeah, you know, have you heard anything back from Ali? Has there been any word from the UFC about potentially having you on this card? Because we know, you know, obviously we've your good pal there, Conor McGregor, but he's not going to fight in Dublin. I think that's pretty much fair to say. It'd be a big, big surprise if he was to fight in Dublin. You know, we need guys from this country on this card, in my opinion. It's always the theme with the UFC on these, you know, European shows. Have you heard anything back from Dana White, Sean Shelby, the UFC, anything about a potential fight on this card?
No, I haven't heard anything back. Obviously, like, Ali will take care of that side of things. You know, but like I said, I contacted him and told him, like, how much I really want to be on this card. So I'm sure he's taking care of that side of things. Just like I said, just seeing him working just one day, like, I can imagine he's already been on to them, and they're probably discussing options and so on.
Joseph, I know you're on a two-fight skid, and everyone knows your ability and how much of a good mixed martial artist you are. Obviously, you're supposed to headline the Three Arena before. Do you feel like that is a realistic possibility, that you may headline even this event?
I don't know is the truth. That's my answer. Especially, like, having lost my last two, like... Whether the UFC feel I'm a big enough draw, you know, obviously there's some exciting fights they could put on that you know, like, I feel like I'm an exciting fighter, and they put me on the card against a good, exciting name, then we'll put on a great show regardless.
I know you're not one to call out fighters, but who are those exciting names you think you'd be match up well against?
There's lots of exciting, like, you look at the lightweight division, how many just exciting strikers there is, you know, like, there's endless. I know on Twitter, like, just from speaking with you two, the amount of people that's been saying about me and Paul, and
Paul Felder, yeah, obviously,
yeah, and that well, you told me this,
it was a fight the UFC were talking about doing, if you had got over against Gaethje. They were talking about doing on a European card here, potentially. So do you feel as though that's something that they could possibly run back? Paul, in fairness to Paul, hasn't really addressed what he's doing with his career yet. He's told me that he's only interested in taking five rounds events and fights that only excite him. And I'm sure a UFC Dublin main event would excite him. And I think he tweeted something in relation to that as well.
That's it. I wasn't aware that they were trying to make that fight back then. So maybe it's true. Maybe it's not. I'm not sure. But if that's something that made sense to Paul and something that made sense to UFC as a main event, and obviously the fans, you know, if it made sense to the fans, then of course, you know, I'm going to step up and as I'm sure Paul would, you know. Obviously, like you said, I'm on a two-fight skid, so I'm a bit down the pecking order. But one thing I can assure is that I'll come to fight, and that then we'll put on a good show.
I've got to ask you, and I mentioned names, and I know you're a guy who doesn't watch an awful lot of mixed martial arts because you're always in the gym yourself. But, you know, we talk about Irish guys and having Irish guys in the cards, and there's only, you know, yourself and Conor that are actually signed to the UFC that are from, you know, the Republic of Ireland at the moment. Do you feel as though the UFC, and I know you know a few guys in this scene here, obviously you've been around for a long time, do you feel as though the UFC are going to make more signings, local signings?
I think so. I think especially watching Cage Warriors and seeing their push back on Ireland too. You know, there's a couple of guys there who could be signed for sure. Like Rhys McKee is flying. Like his last performance, you know, to stop a guy pretty much with a jab. And I've been with Rhys as far. Rhys, I know just high level he is. I definitely think he's ready. He's ready for the UFC, and I think. Obviously, after Cage Warriors in Belfast, you know, all being well, which I'm sure will be, I'm sure that he'll get the shout and he'll be on that Dublin card too.
I know I know Rhys was over working with you guys in TriStar and Faraz and yourself, and you guys obviously get on very well. How much improvement have you seen in this game? You know, how far do you think he can go? Because there's a lot of hype here in Ireland, obviously, about Rhys over the years, and I think more obviously now with this sort of spotlight on that Cage Warriors card ahead of UFC Dublin.
I'm not sure is the truth. Like he always had great striking anyway. Yeah. You know, I witnessed that firsthand. Just sparring with him, he was very good. It's actually something I feel I should have, like somebody I should have tried to bring out for the Vic fight, because he had such good striking and nice range. You know, he would have been the perfect sparring partner for the Vic fight. And I'm just, you know, seeing him, he was a professional, you know. When he came out, there was no messing around. Like, he came to train and he was working hard all the time, as I'm sure he is now. So I'm sure he's made huge improvements in his game.
So Joseph, just before I let you go, and I do appreciate the time as always, my friend. So you're expecting to get on this card is basically the bottom line. You've reached out to Ali. Are you 100% sure you're going to be on this card? Because I thoroughly believe that you deserve it and you should be on it. And obviously, it's a no-brainer from the fans' point of view. We've seen all the traction on Twitter, people talking about yourself and Paul and plenty of other fights. But the people want you on this card. It's a no-brainer, right?
Well, I like to think so. Obviously, like you said, there's not many of us from Ireland that's signed to the UFC at the minute, so... I'm not going to say for sure because I don't make them decisions. You know, it's up to Sean and Dana and them guys who what makes sense for the card. But obviously, I think it makes sense, and I'm hoping I can just be on there and be a part of that card, and obviously, you know, keep pushing Irish MMA forward.
Definitely, I think the scene's in a great place at the moment, and then you'd be a no-brainer, in my opinion, to have a prominent position on that card. Listen, Joe, go enjoy the snow. Go enjoy changing the nappies. It's always a pleasure to speak to you, and I'm looking forward to you hopefully seeing you here in August for that Dublin card on a prominent position on that fight night.
Thanks, Niall. I really appreciate it.
And there was no flyweight champion crown this weekend because Davis and Figueiredo did not make weight. Joseph Benavidez did make weight, but unfortunately...
Yeah.
It did not go his way, and I felt...
He's just cursed. He's never going to win.
I felt an outpouring of emotion for Joseph Benavidez after this fight, because he is very well-liked in the MMA community.
And I don't really like him.
What?
Yeah, no. I had a bit of a... Well, he was just a bit rude to one of our colleagues before the media day, and I found it very strange.
Do tell.
He just basically said, don't call me Joe, my name is Joseph. So when you're acting like that, you know.
Andrew Cole?
It was to our good friend from Manchester. I'm, that's all I'll say.
Oh, Johnny Shrags. Sorry.
Like, come on, you can't. Who doesn't he's like Johnners?
Lovely man. But I've spoke to Joseph a good few times. He's a nice fella. I get it. I think he's a very, very nice man.
There's only one nice Joseph in the USC.
Talk to Joe.
Talk to Joe. But, Joe Duffy.
Yeah, look. It seemed like there was a clash of heads at a right cross, and it was all over. Tough one for Joey B. Tough one for the flyweight division, more importantly.
That's
detrimental,
it's
isn't it?
It's a disaster. Like, you know, Figueroa obviously missing weight for the first time.
Figueredo.
That was Figueredo. Missing weight for the first time in his career in probably the most biggest fight he'll ever have.
And Dana White being like, straight away, this is unprofessional. And it is.
You can't say any more than that. And it is. That was the sort of, I was going, shit, you know it's going to happen now. There's no way Joseph Benavidez is going to win that fight. The flyweights are cursed. That's pretty much it for me. And
you think the division is on its way out?
That's the fourth nail in the coffin. Yeah.
It's a disaster.
And I just don't see a way back for the flyweights now. I really don't. It's unfortunate, but I think that's what Dana's going to be thinking as well, especially after Friday.
Felicia Spencer absolutely dominated Zara Fearn from France. One sided as it gets. People are kind of debating, like, if this 145 title is still active, will it be Megan Anderson beat Norma Dumont earlier in the night with a right cross KO. She got a 50-pound bonus as well. So who would you put in? I'd put in Felicia, to be honest.
One of them. Yeah, I don't like. I think it's hard to really get invested in this division.
There's not enough people.
There's not even a ranking on the UFC.com page. It's just obviously Amanda Nunes. I don't know. It's one of these things. They need to shit or get off the pot with the featherweight division, and it looks more likely to me that they're getting off the pot than having a shit, because it's not happening. Like, it isn't. And this pisses me off, because we constantly go around in circles, and it's the same with the flyweights as well, as we were saying there. Like, it's, you know, what are you doing? You know, be decisive, you know, put together a plan instead of just sort of, you know, tickling the bear and not doing nothing about it. It's just bonkers. Make a decision.
Some serious analogies there from Noel McGrath. A series of analogies.
Yeah. Fuck it.
Let's talk about Magomed Ankalaev and Ion Cutelaba. There's a very differing opinions here. Yeah. It's a mess. There's no doubt about it. The situation's a mess. It's a tricky stoppage. Look, you don't agree with the stoppage.
No. Because he didn't, he's kicked him three times in the head, but he's blocked every shot of them. It's sort of hit his hands, and like the referee's job not to see that. Like, how is he hurt? Like, that's what I don't understand. Like, I know you think it's different because.
Well, I think if I'm putting myself in the referee's shoes there, and look, like, I mean, I don't think this is perfect in any way, but I can't criticize the referee for looking around and seeing a guy that's on Queer Street. As far as he knows, he's rocked. He looks rocked. He's out on his feet. He's wobbling all over the place. And he continues to wobble. Like, usually you're kind of waiting for a guy to kind of regain senses. He looks as bad from when he gets hit or not get hit, whatever the fuck happened. The head kick. He starts wobbling. He throws a few digs. He's still wobbling. He doesn't look like he's recovered at all. Look, the stoppage could have came earlier. Like, if you're just going to stop it from a fella wobbling like that. I think the referee has to step in there. If he thinks the guy is out on his feet like that, he has to protect him. If Cutelaba did this, and he did say afterwards it was game plan, etc., make sure you talk to the ref before you go in, and you say, look, mate, as soon as I eat shots here, I'm going to be fucking putting on a front to make this fella exchange with me. There's just so many. Like, I just think it's idiotic. Like, as I said to you earlier, it's like being in a grappling match and pretending to tap out, and then them stopping the fight, and you're like, oh, sorry, mate. Do you know what I mean? That's what they're looking for, stopping the fight. Like,
I get your point, but should the referee maybe not be more clued in and what, you know, actually seeing where the connection was made, no?
Yeah, but I mean, you're also dealing with split seconds there. Like, I'm sure the guys often don't see the punch that has the fella folded on the ground. Don't see the full connection of it. Like, to be honest, I listened to John McCarthy, Big John McCarthy's podcast for the first time ever today, just to listen to his take on it. And he goes, the referee should know he was acting. Sorry, are you the fucking academy? Are you the Hollywood foreign fucking press? Or are you referees? All you're going to be dealing with is fucking brain damage here. That's what you're looking out for. To say this fella should know if this guy's acting or not, I think that's way beyond the call.
Yeah, that is a bit wild.
So that's just how I feel about it. Look, I get it when people are like, oh, I didn't like the stoppage. I thought the fight could have gone on. And look, after Ion Kutalaba saying that, yeah, it could have. But you can't say, get rid of this referee, he should never work again. Like I've seen dickhead saying online, because he's stopping a guy that he thinks has been rattled. That's a bad narrative. Like, I mean, last week we're talking about how is in Carolina's fight being stopped. Yeah, where's the corner? Yeah, where's the referee? Yeah, and this week we're going, that fucking referee's stopping.
Fair enough. I get your take on it. Yeah.
It's messy though. I'm not trying to say
it's very messy. What do they do now? Like, do they do a rematch? What do they do?
I guess you have to rematch, don't you? But I don't know. I feel like the referee, I don't think he's had a howler there. I think it's a messy, messy, messy result. But
yeah, no, you sort of persuaded me a bit there now from what you said. So I can understand that point. Yeah, it was messy as fuck. There's no doubt about it.
I think we all would have preferred to be a cleaner finish. Yeah. You know, cleaner stop. Like,
well, definitely. True, yeah. But as you said, you know, you've made me think about it there when you've mentioned Carolina last week. And
I feel like we have to have a big whinge, the MMA community, every week. And this was just happened to be this week's.
We do. There's fucking bitching and moaning
fucking
every week.
Fucking fire him. Do you know how disgusting that is? People calling for people's jobs. It's fucking gross.
Fire you, bitches.
Can't fire me. I made the BBC. Tom Breeze did not look himself at all.
No, man.
I was very disappointed. Look, I think Brendan Allen's a very good fighter. There's no doubt about it. But I see Tom Breeze, when he is at the peak of his powers, he looks absolutely unbelievable, doesn't he?
Yeah, that was not the Tom Breeze we've come
to know.
Look,
the guy's a ground wizard. And
he just got beaten alive.
Just didn't seem to have that get up and go in him at all.
He'd one attempt, I think, of a triangle. Barely, and Allen just whooped him. You know, I don't know what's up with Tom. It's tough to see a guy who with so much potential come nowhere near his best.
But you know what I was thinking, and I agree with you, but I was thinking, like, maybe just needed to get this one out of the way, because it's been 2 years. Yeah. There's been so many questions about what happened, these London cards. You know, I think he needed to get in there and get it done, and I think he should be commended for that given the situation.
Oh, yeah.
Or what we're hearing about the situation. And maybe this is something he can build off of, the fact that he got in there.
Yeah, well, he's back in there. It's a start, as you said, and
he's still 11-2. Like, that's a serious record.
Yeah, well, like, look, we've seen him do. When he's been good, man, he's been, you know, a one time guy we were probably talking about as a world champion.
I can remember that before a London card, he fought. I think it might have been his second UFC fight.
Cahill.
No, it was after Cahill. It was. No, Call was the second UFC fight, was it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he lost to Sean Strickland as well.
Yeah, sorry, it was after Call when he fought Kaito Nakamura
at
UFC London. And at the time, Ariel was still with MMA Fighting. And I can remember we were doing the preview show outside the O2. And it was me and Simon Head. And all we were talking about was Breeze. And fucking Bisping was fighting Anderson Silva at the top of that card. So we were like, yeah, that's brilliant, but this is the guy. This is the next guy.
50 Gs for Breeze, innit?
It is. Sometimes.
Well, that's what we used to say, you know, and it's just disappointing. But at the end of the day, if you look at Tom and you've seen his potential, as we've talked about there, you know, he's not going to be a million miles away. It's about, as you maybe said, getting that out of the way and, you know, maybe a quick turnaround now. Probably a bit late for UFC London, but maybe sometime
in the summer.
I think
they should keep him away from that car for a while.
Yeah, definitely agree.
But look, I mean, look, Tom lost a fight. The stuff he's doing at Renegade there is unbelievable. He's the head coach there. It's an incredible team. One of the best teams in Europe, as far as I'm concerned.
I think it's a bigger picture for Tom. Like, it's not just about, you know, he's very passionate about his jiu-jitsu as well, obviously.
But I think he'll be, that's going to disappoint him the most, the ground situation there. Like, he's usually such a liver off his back.
Listen, we must, you know, take our hats off to Brendan Allen as well.
Absolutely.
Fabulous performance. Obviously, he's...
Dominant. It was a dominant.
Dominance, that's the word you could use, you know. And
I never felt he was in a bad spot, really. Yeah. You know, maybe the triangle attempt, but I never felt like, oh, here it's...
Nah, not at all. And they've done a great job with him down there in Rufus Sports. So, you know, a guy to watch, definitely. I think you should keep your eyes on that kid. He's a young lad as well. 13-1, I think he is.
14-3. Marcin Tybura from Poland put on a really workmanlike performance against Sergei Spivak. Two Europeans going head-to-head. We don't like the domestics, lads, but... as it happened later on with Ankalev and Kutalaba, it does happen. He was very dominant. I felt his top position was great. But that's pretty much everything that happened on that card, I believe, from a European perspective. Oh, sorry. Sean Brady, Ireland's own, takes out Ismail Nordiev. I thought he would look great here, Brady.
He's savage, man. I'm telling you, watch out for that guy.
He looked really good. He looked way better than he did in his debut.
I think he was a little bit nervous in the debut.
But Ishmael's a savage. Yeah. Like, I think he's really good, the Austrian wonder boy, and that's a huge scalp for him straight off the bat there, Brady. Again, all European, with Sean Brady being Irish, of course.
I'm telling you, watch out for Brady, man. I'm telling you, this guy's, you know, a young lad as well. And
might get an old sneaky Dublin shout, that lad.
He's definitely one to watch for the future, no doubt about it. No
family
doubt.
From Cabra, I believe.
Yeah. Churchton. And Sean's a good lad.
But, yeah, so will we go on to our third interview of the day?
No.
Looking on to next weekend, it is Jack Cartwright, a man I've wanted to ask questions about for so long. He shot in to...
Just bit his hair.
I did. I was going to get to that. He shot into the consciousness of European MMA when he showed up at that Unplugged show in September last year and starched Scott Malone and Marko Kovacevic to get the title that had just been vacated by Jack Shore.
He looked
unbelievable, man.
Oh, he was taking heads that night.
Have you ever... He reminds me of Neil Seary. He scares the shit out of me. I think I'd be very terrified. I told him that as well immediately. I was like, listen, I'm terrified.
Smaller guys just scare the shit out of you, yeah, don't they?
And he has that hair as well, so I mean, it's a wild card. I was like, definitely keep the hair though, because it's unique. You need something unique. Why not let it be that?
Oh yeah, definitely. What's my uniqueness, Pete?
Dulcet tones, obviously. Come on.
All right, okay.
Hashtag yeah. Dulcet tones.
Here we go. The radio voice is back.
So everybody, yeah, everyone's like, but Niall, geez, he sounds great, doesn't he? And I'm like, what's that meant? What are you trying to say about me?
Then they see me. It's a different story.
I just look like shit and sound like shit. I keep it real.
You're beautiful.
Right, look, we'll get on to Jack. I spoke to Jack about, obviously, his meteoric rise, his first title defense, how he wants to fight on that Belfast card in May. Thank you very much. Sign me up. And, of course, Tyson Fury's win. He's a huge Tyson Fury fan. He lives only 10 miles away from Tyson Fury. He used to train with Huey Fury. So, very interesting stuff from Jack Cartwright. And we will be back shortly. And now we are joined by a man that I've been dying to speak to. A man who shot into our hearts and minds last September when he came in and he took out Scott Malone and Marko Kovacevic to claim the Cage Warriors bantamweight title. For my money, he's the most intimidating champion on all of Cage Warriors' roster at the moment. It is none other than Jack Cartwright. Jack, how are you, my friend?
Yes, I'm good. I'm good, Michael. I'm very good, thank you.
Yes, I have so many questions. I mean, before this event, back in September, the Cage Warriors Unplugged event, they had that four-man series for that vacant bantamweight title. And to be honest, you were the least known guy that I'd heard of out of all those guys. I'd seen most of these guys fight for Cage Warriors titles before. You come in and you put Malone and Kovacevic out in one round to claim the title. How good did that feel?
Yeah, man, it felt very good. It felt very good. Like you say, I was the least known and the least favoured going into the tournament. So it felt sweet to go out there and do it in such definitive fashion and just prove myself to everybody who didn't already know what I was capable of. But it was great.
Like, the one thing I know was straight away, like, your record said 5-0, but I was like, this guy has been fighting a lot longer than 5-0. Can you tell me about your background? I just feel like you're such a sophisticated striker. You've had to have done some striking before you came in there into MMA.
I started doing martial arts when I was 5. I started just knocking about like a kickboxing gym when I was 5. But just for fitness and just getting in shape. And I just like fighting, so I just jumped in there, and then I started wrestling when I was 9, and then really got the bug for competing and started competing all over. I started competing internationally when I was 10.
In wrestling?
And then, I started competing internationally when I was 10 years old. I went to Russia when I was 10 in my first international tournament, and then I wrestled until I was 16, 17 years old. And like you just said, I've boxed since I was 14 as well, so I've always been dabbling in martial arts. So, like you said, I've only had 5 professional fights, but I've got a big catalogue of martial arts behind me, really.
That is incredible, man. I can't believe that wrestling would be your dominant skill set then, right? If you've been doing it that long. And I'm looking at you like you're a striker because you're just knocking guys dead every time you touch them.
Yeah, man. I'm a wrestler, man. I'm a wrestler. So
that's insane.
I'm a wrestler, man, first and foremost. Wrestling was like my first love in martial arts, and I'd obviously grew up loving boxing, and like I'd stay up and watch all the fights. I idolized boxers growing up, and I loved having a scrap. I was always a scrapper, but competition wise, I was a wrestler first, mate. Yeah, and then I just transitioned along the way to boxing and MMA.
it's so rare to see people have that kind of impact on someone when they connect with a punch at your weight division specifically. And that was one thing that has just stuck with me. I've watched the Malone and Kovacevic fight so many times, man. I've just turned on that event and watched your two fights. I mean, do you feel that as well? Because that's what it looks like to me. Like when that right hand comes in, it's just like the lights go off.
Yeah, I've always been that way. You know what I mean? I've always been heavy-handed. I've always when I used to box, for instance, I was never, when I first started, I weren't the greatest boxer really. I weren't too skilled, but like, I'd go out and I'd hit someone with the jab, and then you'd see the eyes widen up even from a young age. I'd hit them with the jab, and they'd look at me and be like, "What were that?" And then that'd be it then for the rest of that. They'd just be on the skates running around the ring, and I'd just be chasing after them. But as I developed and as I grew up, I fine tuned my skill set, and I'm actually a good boxer now. Even though you'll see me swinging here and there, but there's a method to the madness. So I just kind of. I funnel people into where they don't want to go and then touch them. And when I touch them, they tend to fall over. So that's normally the game plan.
Yeah, man, it's a joy to behold. If I wasn't already sold on you after that Unplugged event, there was a moment, and maybe people all don't point to this moment, but I loved it. It was a month later when Moya faced Bulan to be the guy who would go on to face you. Yeah. Moya retires in the middle of the cage afterwards, and they go to your face, and you're just like, I can't fucking believe it. I don't know what you said, but I could read your lips, and I was just like, man, Jack Cartwright scares the shit out of me. And that was when I was like, I think this guy is going
to
be big.
I heard him say my name, to be honest. All I heard him say my name. So I just told him that he'd get knocked Spark out, and then he came out the cage, and then I realised he'd just retired.
It was great the way it just panned to you in that moment, and you looked so pissed off. It was magic, man. I swear to God, whoever edited that piece of footage was absolutely magnificent.
Oh, it was funny.
And were you pissed off, like, because obviously you were there to see who the next guy would be, right?
Yeah, of course. I wanted to fight in December, November time. I wanted to fight early, like, at the end of last year. Mm. So I thought, like, the winner of that Boone and the Maya fight, I thought that'd be perfect. Yeah. And then, obviously, after he'd come out of the cage and I'd realised that he'd retired, I was kind of left twiddling my thumbs then and waiting for the next best thing to come along. So that's what I've been doing. And then, I've ended up falling on my feet, really, being able to go and fight in Manchester on the 7th. So I didn't mind really waiting when I got that opportunity, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, we've had Jack Shaw on this show a number of times, and he of course had a teammate on that in that bracket, I believe, Josh Reed.
Yeah.
And even he kind of came on the podcast the weekend after you were crowned. He was like, this guy is absolutely incredible. He's like, you know, he's after shocking the whole UK and Irish scene with the way he performed, and he expects huge things from you. We were speaking to Daniel Wood, also expects huge things from you. Obviously, both these guys are the last two lads to hold that belt you have. I mean. Yeah. You know, when you look at your record 7-0 now, the way you hit people, the fact that you're telling me you're actually a wrestler and that's not your boxing isn't your dominant skill set. But are you now looking at the UFC? Are you thinking that's right on the horizon right now, Jack?
Oh, well, of course, yeah. I got into the sport to be a UFC world champion. That's why I'm here, you know what I mean? So I'd be lying if I said that I didn't, but at the end of the day, I've got a fight on the 7th, and so I need to take care of business and win. And then obviously there's an eye on the card. I know you're Irish, so that's what I want to be on. Do you know what I mean? I want to get over there and give the Irish fans a good scrap in Ireland. So I want to dust this guy on the 7th of March and then see the UFC come calling. But like you say, I need to just get this business done.
Well, man, that's incredible. I'm going to tell you, a lot of Irish people will be really, really happy to hear that. Now, just in terms of this Manchester card, you're from Bolton, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm from Bolton, mate.
So this is a nice journey for your supporters, right? I mean, does it feel bigger that you're competing so close to home?
Well, yeah, it does, purely for the fact that they've not been to Manchester before, and all my teammates can get on the card, and like all the other Northern guys can come up here instead of having to travel down to London or go to Ireland or go to wherever. It's just in Manchester. There's a load of top gyms up here. So obviously if we go, we're putting on a good show, which I guarantee that we will do. We're going to come back, and then it's just going to be a perfect stage for everybody to be able to get them to where Manchester's show of the future. So that's what I'm proud of that. You know what I mean? Like I said, I'm 7-0 now. I've I've not had too many fights, too many professional MMA fights, but I'm dragging that show up to Manchester, and it's going to stay there, and it's going to show that it's a hotbed for professional fighters.
Yeah, and I know you're an SBG Manchester guy. Have you always been under Inman, or did you get some time with Carl Tanswell, the great Tanswell, Carl Tanswell, who we've heard many people on this podcast praise as a pioneer? Did you work with Carl at all?
Yeah, I worked with Carl for a couple of years. I trained under Saul Rogers at Saul Rogers MMA. That's where I train and coach out of. And then I train my pro team. I train under Matt Inman now up at SBG Manchester for like the past 3 years, 4 years. I was with Carl, and then obviously Carl passed away and Matt took over, and now Matt's my head coach. So I'm just like flourishing up there with Matt.
I can remember I spoke to Alex Unland about Matt, and he was like, you know, Matt is literally exactly the same coach as Carl is. He's so dedicated. He's amazing. Yeah. Is that how you feel it as well? It's basically one guy passing the torch to another?
Yeah, 100%, mate. 100%. He's just, Matt's just, he's given a lot to that gym. You know what I mean? He's put a lot of time into all the guys. He's put his own, like, he had his own career, and then he kind of just put that to the side and put all the team first, and he does everything for everyone. So I can't thank him enough, really. He's put a lot of time into me, and I'm grateful. I'm grateful for all the work that he's put into me down there.
Yeah, absolutely. A legend of that scene. Can you tell me how you're looking at your opponent here? I saw that great video Cage Warriors put out where they were showing you his striking training. And to say you weren't so complimentary of the man is probably being very nice to him. But what can you see about this guy?
I think he's a good fighter. Do you know what I mean? I've said before that he's a good fighter, but I work too hard to not be confident in myself. You know what I mean? I give up everything for this sport. You know what I mean? I'm just grafting all day long, every day. So I'd be foolish if I weren't confident in myself. But I think that he's a tough fighter. I think he's skilled. I think he's good on the ground and he's good standing up. I think when he throws, he commits, which will get him into trouble with me. I think that his wrestling isn't good enough to compete with me, which I don't think anybody in the UK's wrestling is good enough to compete with me. And his grappling is decent. My grappling is better than his grappling. You know what I mean? His grappling is okay, my grappling's good. I think it's good. You know what I mean? I think he's a good fighter, but I just think I'm better. I think I'm better than he is. And if I want to be a UFC world champion, which I fully intend on being, I should be beating my mother.
I wanted to ask you about the hair. Is this a thing that's caught on online? A lot of people talking about the hair when they see you kind of in combat. It's a very unique look. Where did it come from? The rat's tail was a big thing in Dublin as well for a long time. I'm just wondering, is this a way to bring it back? And have you always rocked it like that?
No, I've always had it. And the annoying thing is, for everybody who asks me, there's literally no reason at all. There's no reason. I've just had it my whole life. I've grown up with it, and I've just never. Listen, I've said it once on one other interview, and I put it off once when I was about 7 years old. I've got a bladder infection.
So you go, boom! It's never left me since then. It's always there.
Well, I love it, man. A unique look goes a long way in MMA, so I think you should definitely keep it.
I'll always keep it. I don't even realise it's there. I look at like a video of myself or whatever, and it'll take me by surprise because I have to double check and see if it's me because I don't even remember I've got it on the back of my head.
Well, you see, I can't grow one now because everyone will say, "Oh, I'm jacking your style." But I would if I had seen it on the street, I'd take it off you immediately. But another thing I saw you share just recently on Instagram, and I wanted to ask you about this because where you're from, I can tell you the ramifications of Tyson Fury's win in Ireland is huge. I can only imagine how big it is in Bolton or Manchester. What did you take from that, Jack? So close to your fight as well. Is this a source of inspiration or motivation for you, seeing Fury put on this absolute masterclass in Vegas against Wilder?
Oh, yeah, of course it is, man. I love Tyson Fury, man. I'm a massive fan. I always have been. I grew up boxing with his cousin here. We used to box at the same gym. We used to spar with each other. Obviously, he's a heavyweight now, big here, but he didn't used to be. Like, when we were 14 and that, we used to train and spar together all the time. So I'd seen Tyson about, and he was always like a really nice guy. And obviously, now you can clearly see he's the best heavyweight in the world. So getting to see him go over there and dust Wilder like that, it just filled me full of pride, really. It filled me full of pride and made me, yeah, just anxious to get in there and just show what I'm made of and put a show on.
What do you like most about his style when you're watching him boxing, if you don't mind me asking, Jack? Because I love to hear a fighter's perspective.
That particular fight, the Wilder fight, or yes, in general,
I don't mind. I've watched a fair few of his fights, probably not as many as you, but in general, what do you like about Fury's ability?
He's very well rounded. You know what I mean? He's very, very well rounded. He can stick to a game plan and move around, switch stances, keep it long. He can win like that and box clean. He can make it ugly and tie people up, lean on them, whirl them out, and beat them up that way. He can pressure people down like you just saw him beat Wilder and fill him in. And his little half step back, his little half step back makes him just miss, bam bam, hits him with straight shots and punishes him. He's a full fledged fighter, and like you said, when it gets ugly and dirty in there, he can just make it rough and pull it out of the bag and get the win. So he's got that grit in him, and that's what it resonates, you know what I mean? It makes you realise all you need to do is just believe in yourself. Just like grit your teeth and just believe in yourself, man, and good things will happen, and that's what tends to happen to people. And happened in my life, so I'm just going to keep it rolling.
And it probably allows you to see the pathway. Clearly, this guy has grown up quite close to you, I'd imagine, and he's gone on to be, as you said, the greatest boxer in the world, one of only three ring champions to win it twice, right? Like, I mean, does that kind of hit home for you, that it's so close, see, he's gone and done it?
I think it's just him and Ali. I think it's just him and twice, yeah. But yeah, you're right. Like, he grew up, I think, like less than 10 miles from me. You know what I mean? And it's like, there's loads of fighters like that. There was a time in Manchester where we had 10 boxing world champions all within 10 miles of where I live. You know what I mean? So it's clear that there's a breeding ground for champions around here, and I take pride in that. I take great pride and belief in that, and just knowing that you put that hard work in, you believe in yourself, and you can go out there and get the results.
Final question, Jack, and believe me, this conversation has me thinking that we will see more champions from that region in the future, but yeah. What's your prediction for Bilic? How do you see this one going? Is it going to be another clinical striking performance, or are you going to showcase a bit of this grappling for us?
At the end of the day, I'm always going in there to knock someone out. So if you come and watch a new fight, the plan is always to go in there and knock somebody unconscious. That's my job at the end of the day. But I'm fully prepared to go in there and grind for 25 minutes. I will go out there and do what it takes to win 100%. I'll put myself first, and I'll put my teammates first, who grind with me every single day. And we go through hard sparring sessions and hard grappling sessions every single day, and that's not going to be for nothing. You know what I mean? I'm going to go in there and get the win first and foremost. But hopefully, I'm going to go in there, hit him with a big shot, and send him packing.
Well, you won't find me complaining if that's how it goes, Jack. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you, man, and I cannot wait to see how this unfolds. And I have my fingers and toes crossed that you'll be over on the Emerald Isle and I'll be able to meet you in person, my friend.
Yeah, no worries, and I do as well. I can't wait to get over there, mate. Thanks a lot for having me.
All the best, Jack.
Thanks.
And we have an action-packed weekend ahead of us. No, it's not. It's lovely. And of course, Jack Cartwright will be on the top of that Cage Warriors 112 card there in Manchester. First time they've ever been in Manchester. Let's take a look at that card now, shall we? It is a very nice one. I'm very excited. There's lots of Irish interest as well for our folks back home. But starting off in that main event, Manuel Bilic, a good test for Jack Cartwright. I mean, he's a bit of an unknown quantity, Jack, but what really stuck out to me in that interview is he's out there knocking people dead, and he feels like wrestling is his strongest skill set. He has competed all over the place. He's competed in Russia, I believe he said, in the interview. Like, I mean,
because he was just going in there and literally taking the lads' heads off.
Just right hand, bang, good luck, Michael. And when he was touching lads, like, you just see it straight away. Like, they're just like, their eyes are like, what the fuck?
What the fuck did I sign up for here?
Wait, hang on. Does he have hair on the back of his head? But, he's a very, very interesting guy. I'm really into it. And I love the fact that he's already saying, if I win this, I want to fight in Belfast. Yeah. A double header in Belfast now.
Does he want to fight everyone on the whole card?
I wouldn't put it past him. Yeah. But definitely looking forward to seeing him back in action. What about this welterweight co-main event?
Yeah.
It feels like Adam Proctor, for me, is a savage. Yeah. He's one of Alex Unland's lad. He's a beast. Matas Flaminis, I don't know a lot about him, but he's right up there at the top. But there's a welterweight title fight happening in Belfast now. Yeah. I mean,
it's a no-brainer. It's the winner of this fight's Reese. I don't think that's like rocket science to sort of work that out, but
Proctor v. McKee would be a fucking wild wouldn't fight. It? Oh, and my God.
I think the best thing here for Reese McKee is that they both just knock lumps out of each other. you know, from his point of view, he'll obviously be watching on with a keen eye on this one. And yeah, it is. It's probably the fight to make. I don't think that's we're a million miles away by saying that. But yeah, it's a fight I'm very much looking forward to. It's a good card this weekend. It's really solid stuff. And yeah, McKee and Proctor would be tasty, wouldn't it?
It would indeed. There's a lot going on here as I just go between Tapology and the Cage Warriors site to realise what way the card's going. Martin Stapleton v. Yassin Belhaj. Stapes,
that's
of course,
a tasty one.
A legend of the UK scene at this stage. Belhaj only 6-2, but
he's fun to watch.
He is indeed. That's a very nice fight. What about Andy Townsend? James Webb back in action against Mick Stanton. I talked to Chris Fields a bit about this. This is a big fight because Mick Stanton's been on a run at 185 since he's moved up. And I felt as though Stanton would be the next person
to get a shot
to fight Natalius. So I feel like James is putting himself right back in there.
Well, it's a big one for James as well. See how he's going to bounce back, you know, after losing that title. And it's a huge, huge moment in his career, I feel.
Absolutely. Let's just have a look at the card here again. Excuse me. Scott Malone, obviously, and Adam Wilson. Scott Malone was taken out in the first round by Cartwright. That's another man who could put himself in the hat. Liam Gittins from Liverpool, I believe, against Jonas Magard at bantamweight in the pro prelims as well. There could be, like, I think Gittins is a future challenger without a doubt, so that's interesting to see. Tom Mearns in action against Stephen Hooper following his late withdrawal from Bellator Dublin could not secure GP's clearance to say he can lose the weight to make featherweight. He's back at lightweight here, which is good. Aaron McGuire from Cork. I don't know if he's actually been, has he been matched? Let me just check. Yes, against Jabid Rahman, 2-0. So that's a nice fight for Aaron. Very, very big stakes there, you'd imagine. And we also have James Sheehan back. Andy Ryan's blue chipper. Of course, we remember James Sheehan and Ian Garry had an epic fight in both of their debuts. An unbelievable fight. We were crying about them even being a match at the time, but Jesus Christ, it was a great showcase for what we have.
Has he fought since then? No.
I don't think so, no. I don't think he has. So it will be interesting to see him coming back from that. Obviously, a lot of damage taken in that fight, without a doubt. And Paul Hughes there as well.
Hughes.
You know, look at the amount of Irish fighters here with that Belfast card on. Like, I mean,
Showy's fighting as well, isn't he? Is that the week after?
He's in London. He's fighting in London. Sorry, I got that arseways. But Paul Hughes, James Sheehan, obviously James Webb, we've taken him on as one of our own too. A huge, huge fight there. A lot of huge fights in terms of Irish interest. Let's have a look at UFC 248, though. That's the big one.
It is.
Yoel Romero and Israel Adesanya.
I don't want to fight Yoel. He's a scary man.
I have a feeling that's going to happen because he keeps saying it.
Yeah.
Like, I
want to fight anyone but Yoel, Ariel.
And hopefully we'll be speaking to Darren soon about these things.
Darren, he's trying to get Darren on a
He's accepted
phone,
about
man.
15 interviews, we just never got them.
Yeah, I think he agreed to 6 with me last week alone.
Oh, he was doing the show this week as well. I think he's winding us up at this stage. Yeah. Israel v. Yoel, how interested are you in this? I love it.
Man, I can't call it. I think it's one of those ones where you're just going, literally, give me a coin, flip it, see what's going to happen. It's a dangerous, dangerous one for Izzy. And you have to give him credit for just loving this fight. And really, he really pushed for this fight.
Well, he's like, I'm going to have to fight this dude eventually because he's not going away. Like, I love that. And did you see, we've talked about it an awful lot. Did you ever see Jose Youngs when he asked...
don't know who he is, sorry.
A fellow I work with.
Okay.
He asked Jorge Masvidal about this fight. And the way Masvidal pitched it was absolutely unbelievable. Like, he loves Israel. And obviously, great friends with Yoel. And he was like, I just love the fact that this kid wants to fight Yoel. He's a nightmare. But the thing about Yoel, right? Why does he wrestle? Like, he's an unbelievable wrestler. Like, and obviously, that's where he's going to have a huge advantage over Stoyles. It's like, is he actually going to wrestle this time?
Yeah, you never know what you're going to get from Yoel in a fight. Like,
we were interviewing Hermanson last time. He's like, I think I'm a better test of how good his takedown defense is because at least I'll shoot a takedown, right? He's like, of course Yoel's a better wrestler, but he never really shoots.
Yeah, you just don't know what you're going to get. And I think this is the only way he wins this fight, is by using his wrestling, being that gritty, grindy style.
Gritty, but, grindy, your favourite phrase.
Yeah, it is my favourite phrase. That's pretty much the way I see it going. But again,
he can also explode like he did against Chris Weidman
with that knee.
Fucking hell. Like,
so it's going to be interesting to see what, you know, approach Izzy goes in with as well. Like, is he going to be more cautious? I can see this just being a fucking wild fight. I think we're going to see something really
exceptional. Could be fight of the year. Like,
yeah, it's one of those.
I think the co-main could be fight of the year as well.
Yo's going to miss weight though.
I just cursed it. Weili Zhang against Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Are we gonna have a title come home? It's a tricky fight, man.
Is there any European champions?
Yes. Habib Nurmagomedov.
Is that it? That is it, isn't it? Jesus Christ.
Valentina Shevchenko.
Oh, sorry, shit. Like, okay, I'll just shut up. I won't say anything
else. This is crazy talk. I can't believe you didn't remember Valentina, of all people. My God.
Yeah, listen, man, I love this fight.
Stipe Miocic from Croatia.
Yeah, that's true.
We've got loads of champions, man. It's just you have to open your mind a little bit.
We'd what? How many Irish guys in the show this week? All our, well, three Irish guys.
None UFC champions yet. But,
yeah, I love Joanna. I think it's great. She's back in there. But, you know, again, Weili Zhang.
Remember when we had Joanna on the show and she was like, look at her guns, man. Like, yeah. She's even like, what the fuck is going on here?
It's like, she's just impressed me so much.
She's unbelievable.
Have we seen her do anything bad?
Nothing. No.
It's actually been, her tenure in the UFC has been near enough perfection.
The only thing I will say about this, the camp has had issues because of the amount of moving around they've had to do due to the coronavirus.
She saw it like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago to Vegas.
Yeah, Guilherme was covering it all. I mean, it felt like there was a lot of updates, there was a lot of chopping and changing. Yeah. Like, I mean, that stuff affects her, there's no doubt about it. Like, I mean, obviously she's been able to settle in, and I believe her coaches did get their visa sorted out and all that stuff, but it still sounded like a couple of weeks back, it sounded like it was a bit of a clusterfuck.
And I know... The Leech, I think, had similar problems as well. He's also farting in the car. That's a really good fight. That's going to be unsettling. But you know, she's a professional. She
looks like a consummate.
She just looks like an absolute savage. And I think this is going to be a very, very tough task for Joanna to go out there and cause an upset. And you don't often say that when Joanna's fighting, that she's going in as underdog. And I think she is this week. And I'm just interested in Joanna's mindset as well. She seems to have chilled out a little bit, altered. I think, you know, her ego took a bit of a bashing when she lost to Rose.
Boy, like, this is the thing we always say about it. People give her such a hard time, but she's so interesting. Like, I mean, she's so captivating, you know? Like, I mean...
She's one of my favourite fighters to speak to.
She makes things more exciting. Yeah. Like, I mean, who else could you put in at 115 against Weili Zhang that would make us care this much? Like,
no one.
Absolutely no one.
No.
Weili Zhang needs this fight more than Joanna does. For the stock she can build off a win off Joanna.
Oh, yeah. And as you said there, Joanna intrigues you. She makes you want to tune in and watch her fights because she's such an intriguing figure and a character.
And she wears great runners.
Yeah, and she's cool. Yeah. I know she says she obviously got criticised for that post about the coronavirus, but listen...
We all make mistakes.
I don't think it was...
She was resharing.
Yeah, I don't think it was meant to offend anyone. I
understand that it did, obviously. Yeah. Like, you know, Jesus, the situation has gone amplified beyond belief now this stage. We've even got cases in Ireland at the moment. It's just one of those things. Further down the card, we have Ireland's Sean O'Malley coming back against Jose Alberto Quinones.
Savage.
Look, man, I really like that Italian Wood fight. They've both talked about it. If he gets through Quinones, which I expect him to, even though he's been off for quite a while, make that fight.
No.
Because Vera's matched again. He's fighting Wineland or someone. Like, I mean, that was the fight to make several times over at this stage.
Do you think so?
Vera and Nathaniel.
Oh, yeah. Vera and Nathaniel, yeah.
You just don't, like, you'd be of the classical thinking, don't put two prospects.
Just at the moment. Let them settle. You know, get Wood back in the wheel column. This is a big test for Sean O'Malley. He's been out for quite some time, man. And
I think that's the test. I think the test is how can he perform coming back. Like, if you would have matched Quinones,
tough man.
He is, but if you would have matched Quinones with O'Malley and had he never had this ban and stuff and it just came off after his last fight, I would have happily
backed O'Malley. Yeah, I agree. I think
the big differential here
is the time off.
Yeah, absolutely.
And bouncing back and see how it's affected him and see if he can go in there and you know, I think for Sean as well, because of the hype around him, it's about putting in a performance, man. It's not just about winning anymore for Sean. There's a lot of eyes on this kid.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I feel like he's been very hard done by. A guy who seemed to have his whole career at his feet. It seemed like it was just about to launch, and then obviously this USADA situation. Kind of messed that up for him.
Did. But listen, another guy that's intriguing. People want to tune in to see him fight, and we need guys like that in the UFC. It's very, very important. And I think we forget sometimes that, you know, the UFC potentially don't do a great job in promoting their lot of fighters. And I think Sean is one of these guys that, you know, they're obviously clearly getting behind. And it's good to see it, because we need the UFC to sort of spread the wealth, I think, in their with their marketing prowess.
Another European, Saparbek Saparov, has a big, big test on his hands against Rodolfo Vieira, one of the great jiu-jitsu players of all time.
Is he better than you?
Come on, mate.
Yeah, silly question.
But he's now... He came off that win. Remember Pachota in his debut?
Yeah.
Arm triangle, really, really lethal.
Oscar Pachota.
Yeah, and look, Saparbek Saparov is there. I expect Vieira to be able to get through him, to be completely honest. It's Saparbek is coming down from 205 to 185, so that could be a bit interesting, but I expect the grappling strength of Rodolfo to be on a different level completely. Speaking of grappling strength, we also have Mark O. Madsen, the great Olympian, taking on Austin Hubbard. He'll put on his 9-0 record on the line. And yeah, it's looking good for Mark O so far. I think he's spending a lot of time in Vegas at the moment. I believe he is one of managed by Ali now as well.
Probably. Who isn't?
Yeah, that's a good point. And Darren Wynn returns just after this loss to Darren Stewart against Gerald Merchart. That should be actually a tasty fight there to open the card. Not a lot of European action, but I will end it by asking you for some predictions now. Okay. Israel Adesanya v. Yoel Romero. How's it end? Who wins?
On you.
How's it happen?
5-round war.
He just grinds it out, edges it, or does he whitewash him?
No, Izzy will come back strong in the fourth and fifth, but ultimately Yoel will walk away with the victory.
And will it be the thing that everyone's crying about on Sunday morning?
Yes. Obviously.
They need something.
We can't go a week without it. It'll be a split decision. The judges will get it wrong in every scorecard, but somehow...
Everyone in the UFC.
Yeah, that's what we'll be talking about on Sunday. There'll no doubt it'll be some controversy.
I'm going with my boy Izzy.
I wouldn't be listening. I can't call it.
Just doing it to be interesting.
Fuck it.
I think he's going to stop him with strikes in the third round.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised in that either at all.
Because his volume is unbelievable. And he seems to be a lot better at wrestling defense than people give him credit for. Even though, again, we're kind of wondering, will Yoel actually test that area? Because it seems he doesn't seem too transfixed on the takedown.
Yoel never does what we expect him to do.
Yeah.
He'll do something fucking mad. He'll jump over the cage or something, leap. Yeah. It reminds me of like Blanco. Do you remember Blanco from Street Fighter? He's
It's just wild energy. Yeah, absolutely.
Just a lunatic.
All right, co-main event. Willie Zhang versus Joanna. Who wins and how'd she get it done?
I think Yoeli finishes Joanna within three.
What? How did she finish her?
Ground and pound. She'll drop her with a left hook. She'll attempt a submission, but then she'll fall off and then she'll just slap her in the face. It's one.
There you go. Put your money on slap to the face, ending the fight. I'm going Joanna decision.
Ooh.
And our jab is going to light the night up.
It's a good call.
That's what I believe is going to happen. When you look at the way Joanna fought Jessica Andrade, that is a masterclass.
Yeah.
Jab the face off that Brazilian girl.
She did.
But she's going to have to avoid that power of Wiley Zhang. But I do feel, even though Zhang took care of business against Andrade, I feel Andrade is the bigger one-shot power between her and Zhang.
I just think the air of invincibility has gone from Joanna.
And she's going to remind us all why.
Yeah, no, I'd listen. I would not be surprised, but you just don't feel as though she's where she used to be maybe in her career.
Harsh words for a European legend. One of the greats of all time.
She is, don't. That's not in question.
Don't get it twisted, no. Europe all day long here, I hope. Look, we have an interview with Chris Fields.
Another one.
He has a There's a lot of interviews this week. He has a return bout in April 18th. He's done a few interviews so far, but I feel like we tickled a bit more out of him today than maybe has been put out there so far. Of course, this whole thing popped up after UFC Dublin was announced. Shortly thereafter, Chris is announced for a comeback fight. Carl Pendra's online saying, wouldn't that be amazing? Chris Fields, a retirement bout.
Yeah, you said it.
In the three arena, so...
You called it, in fairness, a few weeks ago. You said it to me before it even happened.
I thought it was a nice idea, but then when I saw the interviews, he wasn't really talking about it, so I was like, oh, maybe he's not going to talk about it. And then, boom! I arrived in Swords today, just before I got down here, and he hit me with the hot facts.
Swords.
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 It's like a little drop of the south side on the north side.
Ah, it's a shithole. Don't even try...
Did you hear that, Fieldsy?
To brush it over, yeah. Did you hear that, Fieldsy?
El Storco Blanco.
El Storco.
Look, we'll go to this interview with Chris Fields. He graciously sat down and let me be in his company for 15 minutes today.
Poor bastard.
What a gentleman. And we'll be back after that to talk shite until the podcast ends. You've been asking me to get him on, and he is back once again. Not in the host realm this time, though. He's a guest, of course. Chris Fields, the legendary Irish MMA, a former Cage Warriors middleweight champion, making his long-awaited return to the banner on April 18th. This has all come out of left field to a certain degree, but Jesus Christ, that was some reaction, Chris. Did that blow you away a bit? Like, I mean, you know, you're still an active fighter, but just the announcement that you're coming back to Cage Warriors, everyone, you know, huge online, huge online traction for it. Did you expect that?
No. I don't know what the, like, I just kind of glide through my life thinking I like fighting, so I'll fight. And I don't really think people take too much notice. And it's kind of, yeah, I was actually saying it to like a good few of my mates. I was like, it's a bit mad, isn't it? Like, people actually like watching you, what you do. Like watching me do what I do is cool to me, but I never really look at it that way. The lads kind of slag me here because I just don't really see it that way. When I hear, like, I don't know, like stupid terms like legend or pioneer and all this fucking shit, like, I don't, you know what I mean? I'm just some lad who likes kicking and punching the lads in the face while they like, yeah. It's like, we've had this discussion before. To me, like, it's like you're selling your body. It's prostitution, kind of. Like, I'm selling my body for people's entertainment. You know what I mean? Like, but I love doing it. I'm sure most prostitutes don't love doing it, but like, I love doing what I do. And I just kind of, it amazes me that people like seeing me do it, but it's cool. I like it a lot.
You with Cage Warriors, I mean, I feel like you've made a big kind of commitment to Cage Warriors as a coach with your guys. James, of course, former middleweight champion. He's taking on Mick Stanton this weekend. And of course, Ian Gary now is the talk of the town in Ireland. Like, you know, he really is the talk of the parish. What convinced you to go back to Cage Warriors? I feel like that would have been on the table for a long time, but I mean, what prompted it at this moment?
Well, realistically, like, my aim was always to kind of have my last fight or two with Cage Warriors. That was always what I wanted to do. It would have felt like home to me. Cage Warriors always has. They've always been very good to me. The yellow gloves feel right for me, you know. And then realistically, like, I didn't know whether I was going to have this conversation now, but I'm going to. I'll tell people what the plan is. So the plan is basically to fight in April, get a win, and then push for the UFC in August. So,
well, that was a big one because that was obviously going to be my next question because Carl Vendred tweeted this and it went crazy as well. When basically the UFC Dublin announcement came out, he says, wouldn't it be great to have Chris Fields on this card? Because let's be honest, you were the guy out of everyone that everyone thought was really going to be there. You know, everyone thought that you were going to be in that mix. And it felt like for ages we were nearly counting down to it, right? It was like every time you fought, oh, if he wins this, yeah. You know what I mean? It really felt like that. You were definitely the most prominent name that didn't kind of get to where the black gloves go to the octagon, etc. after your journey with Tough. But I mean, this all came afterwards, right? This announcement and stuff. Like, have you talked to Graham Boylan and said, like, this is the goal? Like, I mean, that light heavyweight title's vacant. There's a lot of moving parts here.
Yes, so I spoke to Graham. Yeah, I spoke to Graham and I told him what I wanted to do. He was supportive of the whole thing, always has been, to be honest. So my plan will be fight April, push for the UFC in August. If that's not coming about, then fight for the Cage Warriors title. But my overall plan will be fight April, push the UFC in August. If I get it, then I'm gonna leave my gloves in there in August and be done with it. Like, that's it for me.
That adds a lot of interest, right? Like, I mean, in terms of when you look at the UFC coming to Dublin, you need local storylines. We've always had local storylines on these cards. You know, even as far back as Tom Egan, the first Irish guy to fight in the octagon, it was there. Second one, obviously, is Conor's debut. Then you had Paddy getting rushed into the main event last second the last time. This one doesn't seem to have as many available storylines, right? The only thing that people are really focused on at the moment is Rhys McKee. If he wins the title, he's there. Whereas if you have this guy that's a pioneer of the sport here, without a doubt, a former, like, you know, well-established name in Europe, he's going in and he could be potentially fighting his last fight in the octagon. I mean, that makes a lot of sense, right? Like, I mean, that would be a huge, huge attraction for Irish fans especially.
Yeah, like I said, I don't really...
No, say you're great, go on.
For me, that would be like a kind of nice end to the story. If it doesn't come about, well then, it'll be the Cage Warrior style and leave the gloves down after that one. But it'd be a fairly special moment for me to be fighting in the UFC, and I think, I get to make it all about me then, and not a dry eye in the house, and or chair.
Is this like, I mean, does Graham think this is a possibility? Obviously Graham has brought 95 fighters to the UFC, so I mean, I'd say he have a good idea if this is something that would whet the UFC's appetite.
Yeah, you know, I just kind of told him what the plan is. So, like, this, the first part of the plan is April. So, like we've said a lot of times before, it's like, Crystal's this one, you know. So I really hope I'm not falling into this trap again. But to be honest, he likes the storyline. I think everyone kind of likes the storyline and the narrative that I've spoke to. To be fair, it was Cottle's idea. Like, he messaged me about it. He's like, dude, you should do that. Like, I'm finish up on that, you know. I've been kind of like eyeing the exit for a while, trying to figure out how to do it. And I felt recently like that it was just starting to get away from me, as in it wasn't going to be in my control. It was just going to happen. And I was like, shit, this is a bit mad. I'm going to end up like just not having a fight, and then it's all over. And then I'm like, and then I'll be some fucking weird fucker in my 40s. So I just kind of want to do it on my own terms. And I just feel like either of those situations, whether it was UFC or the Cage Warriors title, then just leave my gloves down and just be done with it on my own terms, I think it'd kind of put it like a nice full stop on it for me. And then I think for everyone, it kind of just goes, right, that's it then. You know what I mean?
It sounds to me you're saying like 2020 is your last year of competition, whatever way you're looking at it. Like, I mean, are you putting years on it, or are you putting like fights on it? Like,
I'm done by September either way. So my plan will be like either of those two things. But it, like, to be honest, if you look at my team, it's getting harder and harder to, you know, balance everything. I've got a family as well. So I'm just trying to like kind of do it on my terms, which is difficult enough. But I'm lucky. The other side of that with the team is that I've literally created my own training partners.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, sometimes to my own demise, but yeah. So I have like all the guys around me that I need. I have, you know, and then of the likes of Colin, all come in to help me. That's kind of like, it has to end at some point, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I never thought I was going to be the type of guy to actually say I was done, but like, I feel like if that storyline played out, I don't think there's any better way to do it.
Stuff. Yeah. Without a doubt. Like, and you know, you said to me for a long time, this coaching thing, I can remember when you opened this gym first, you were like, geez, I really like this. You know, I can really see this being me. Is that what it is? Like, it's just, you know that, look, Ian Garry, as you said, James Webb, already a Cage Warriors champion. Like, these guys already have names. This gym isn't open in a long time. Like, is that what kind of the success, obviously you've got great numbers here as well. Is that's kind of underlying the reason for you, I need to commit more to coaching?
Yeah, you know, and it's hard to juggle both things and do them right, you know. So, the guys kind of, I've filled the lads in on my plan, so they know it. So, like, it's not like I'm surprising anyone with anything. And so, like, they'll be willing to kind of bend a little till that's over, you know what I mean? But you can't be putting other lads on the, like, on the back burner while you're getting ready for your own fights all the time. So they know how this one's going to play out. I've timed it well. The April card, none of my guys are going to be on it. So it's my own thing, you know. So I can just go over with my team and go and fight and concentrate myself. And then whatever happens after that, then... And then just that, like, I can just pour all my focus into them. I feel like that's what was kind of happening anyway the last while. And that's what I was saying. It was starting to just get away from me a little bit. Like, and, you know, I think there's like, you know, sometime you have to call off. But like, I think it has to, like, things have to be on your own terms, or there's always that little bite in you. You know what I mean? It's all, look, like, I'm always going to want to fight. I love fighting. I do. And I don't look at it as prize fighting. I look at it as sport. Like, I love the sport of it. I love competing and contesting with other people. And I get the other side. I get the money-making side and all. It's just never been my big goal in it, you know. Never been about that. Like, so.
What's it like having, like, people talking about the likes of Ian and UFC Dublin? Like, his name was, like, one of the most prominent names that's being talked about already. He's just 3-0 in his career so far. Is that a bit overwhelming at all when you think of how quickly everything's happening? Like, we literally predicted this. When, like, this guy was an amateur, I was like, when you were telling me, when this guy goes pro, it's going to go off into the stratosphere straight away. And it really has. It feels like you're nearly holding the guy back. You know, it's like, Jesus, I want to calm you down here before you take off. It, like, I mean, How does that feel to you? Like, is that a realistic goal right now, or is that something you don't really want on Ian's mind at the moment?
You know, he's got fights coming up, so he has to deal with them first. I think, like, for me, and, you know, I've discussed this with Ian, so it's not anything, like, we haven't had a conversation about. I think it's early, like, very early for him, like, you know, this time next year, like March, like the London card that they do every year, that'd be almost ideal, you know, or even a little bit later. He's very young, but he's fantastic. And, you know, the thing is for him, like, he's not in the same boat as someone like me, man. He's going to be there. I think anyone can see that. You know what I mean? Even if he picks up a loss as, like, at this level, like, and then comes and gets a few moments, he's definitely going to be there. You can see it in the kid. Like, he has that je ne sais quoi, as they say, you know. But I just, yeah, it'd be very early. And I look at people that have done it right, and the Jack Shores and all these kind of people. And that's kind of the road I see. Like, you know, I see.
That's where you see him with the belt and getting that promotional power put behind him. Because, like, when Jack and Nathaniel went, like, just for example, two guys have gone from the Cage Wars to UFC. They were established brands nearly before they went in. Is that the way you see it with him?
Yeah, and I also think, like, I don't want him to just find UFC. He's not, again, it's not like me. I want him to be a UFC champion, and I think that's very possible for him. You know, kind of way. So I think that's the road for him. So I think putting some kid in just because, like, the name, you know, and you go, oh, the UFC, he has to... It could be detrimental, and you've seen it as well. Amazing fighters maybe pick up a loss, UFC cut them, they're just never the same again. You know, the road seems hard to get back, you know, in that kind of way. So I just think, like, I'm going to be smart with that kid and play it. Now, he's a grown man, so his decisions are his own, but my advice would always be to, like, err on the side of caution. Like.
You've been saying this about Webby as well. You've been sure to be throwing his name in the hat in every time you see even the media guys talking about who could potentially be there. Obviously, he's got great links to this gym, great links to Ireland. He's obviously fighting this weekend against Mick Stanton. That's a fight that, like, I expected Mick Stanton to be fighting for the title if it wasn't James. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So is that really what you see? This is another, basically another title attempt could come on the back of this?
Yeah, I'd kind of like to keep James fighting the three rounders for a while. He's been doing the five round thing a bit, and
it's a lot.
And he's a crazy hard worker. He's ridiculous. It's humbling sometimes how much he puts in for everyone. But I think like he beats, maybe he has two or three. He could easily be on that card in Dublin. Like, that'd be fucking cool sharing it with him. Like, yeah. You know. But he could easily be on that card. You know. It's more about the performances now for James. He needs a couple of big performances. You know, he knows that too, like, go in there. And that's the way he's feeling. That's the way he's training. So expect, like, sexy violence at the weekend.
So imagine you're going over here, you know, obviously the corner, James, and you're going to be seeing Graham Boylan there. And I'm saying there's going to be a bit of talk about the potential opponent you can face in 6 weeks' time or whatever it is. We know that Ian Dean is, me and you agree on this, I think he's the best matchmaker in the world, to be honest. When you see what he's done with this focused area, UK and Ireland, I think it's unparalleled. But the thing really, I guess, I know you've already fought these guys, but I mean, I guess the thing, if you're like in James's situation or in Ian's, they always kind of want to see you up against like an established name or like a former UFC fighter or something like that. Is that ideally what you'd be looking for here if Ian Dean could manage it?
Yeah, look, I'll let them decide. some bouncer from down the road that has a cold would be great. No, you know me, I always want to be fighting the good guys. So, like, whatever they come up with, I'll go. I'm just following their lead. Like, I've never really, in my whole career, I've never, like, picked an opponent. I get offered someone, I say yes. Generally, don't even look at them. I just go, yeah, and then figure it out after that. You know, I weirdly... It's weird because I'm so different with my own guys. I'd like be no one on my team is allowed to like speak to promoters. They come through me. Everything comes through me. I study all their opponents before we make any agreements. Me, they send the name. I'm like, yep. Because I just look at it. I still look at it as we're out on the road somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, some lad walked up and shouted at me or something. You know? Yeah, it's ridiculous. Because
professional fighter Chris Field.
I know, and it's how I am. Like, it's weird how I am with all my other guys and how kind of controlling I am with it. And then with me, I'm like, whatever the fuck, let's go. But I think that's part of the fun for me. You know, and it's always been part of the fun, the madness of the whole fucking. It's a mad sport. It's a fucking mad sport.
Do you have an ideal in your head? Like, is there any ideal opponent for the Cage Warriors?
No, like I said, to be honest, I'm trying to think of the light heavyweight. It's not mad thick, is it? Like, there's not too many floating about, so I'll see who they come up with, and we'll just go from there. I'll make sure you're the first to know, though, I promise. I promise. I won't do you but dirty.
If you get the win, is there an ideal opponent for a UFC Dublin show? Because, I mean, I liked Carl's suggestion of Paul Craig, because that fight is like... years, it got history. Paul's has established himself in the UFC. He's got an even record.
I think that's the main issue, though, that Paul's established himself in the UFC. So, like, I don't like as much as there is history there, I don't really hold a place to be calling someone out that's like fighting, you know, that long in the promotion, and he's like just taking a draw off Shogun. Like, so I'm like, you know me, man, I'm not one of those guys. Like,
but so you're calling out Shogun.
Yeah, I'd definitely do that fight, man. Holy God, that'd be a dream come true. Anderson at 205. Just teep the face on me, man. It's grand. It's like a snuff movie. Just do it. Just teep me in the face, please. It's not a foot fetish, man. I just want to teep in the face. The former Cage Warriors light heavyweight champion Modestus has just signed to them. He's fighting in London. Like, that could be a possible one. Like, you know, something like that. As much as I like Carl's idea, I think Paul may have just passed on, you know, kind of, and I don't know, like, I'm not going to have a bunch of fights in a promotion, so, but yeah, like, you know, me, man, if it was a possibility, we're definitely going to do it, but, yeah.
How happy is Laura going to be about all this? Because, you know, she's been a rock for you the whole time here, like, and this is, as you say, you know, this is going to be your last year, like, will that be a great sense of relief, or will that be, you know, emotional moment for you guys as a family when you eventually do hang it up, or is it going to be a classic MMA retirement, and you're going to be out of retirement 2 months later?
I don't know. To be honest, Laura is more stoked about me trying this than like she's kind of, a lot of times she's the driving force. She loves, like, she didn't love me fighting, she loves me doing what I love doing, you know. And she would have been someone saying to me, like, you know, you need to finish it out in your terms and all that kind of stuff, because she knows me, so she doesn't want some bitter old bastard for the rest of her life. You know what I mean?
Definitely happen.
Oh, 100%. Like, you know, if I'd have just let it run, and then, like, I was like, oh shit, now I'm 43, I can't do this anymore, you know, I'd be like fucking pissed off, midlife crisis, grow the ponytail,
collect snakes,
going around in the Mazda, is it an MX-5? Yeah. Trying to chat up 19-year-olds, you know what I mean, like a fucking loser. Oh, sorry, I probably offended a bunch of dudes.
You've offended my life. But, Chris, it's an absolute pleasure, and this is a great story. I really hope... I think it's going to be an adventure over a few months here, which I like. It's like the restory in a way, where it's going to add a lot of interest to this Cage Warriors show too, having you back and then having that story off the back of it. So I really can't wait to see it, and I hope it goes according to plan, because it would be a fitting way to finish off the career, I feel. I think a lot of Irish fans will agree with me.
Yeah, it's me, so chances of going to plan are pretty fucking slim. But look, best laid plans of mice and men and all that shit. We give it a shot and we see how it plays out, and hopefully I'm kicking some dude in the face what do we even call it now? Is it the Tree Arena now, is it?
I can't believe you, of all people, have said that.
The point.
That's why I used to write back to articles I'd written for publications. It's not the Tree Arena, you dope! I'm like, all right.
Yeah, so hopefully I'm kicking some lad in the face in the Point Theatre in August, but if not, sure. I did it my way.
Absolutely, Chris. Pleasure, man. Thank you. Are you boiling or are you selling it right there, Noel?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Are you buying it or are you selling it?
I don't sell anything.
But are you buying the Fields?
Oh.
Cage Warriors?
Yeah.
Well, what else would we talk about?
Well, we need local interest. We need...
It's a great local
story. Hopefully the UFC hear this.
Oh, you know they listen. Of course. All right, Sean. How you doing, man?
Hey, Sean. Hey, Mick.
Don't be ringing me that late.
Yeah. Stop ringing us. I love it. I think it's something we need. We need more stories. We need more narratives like that. And what a fitting way to an Irish legend of mixed martial arts to go out on his shield in Dublin on August 15th. Incredible story.
Like, it's funny with Chris. Like, he's always like, that announcement went wild the other day when it was coming back. And he's like, talking to me today, he's like, I didn't really expect any of this to happen. Like, I put his name in.
Everyone was covering it. It wasn't like all the mainstream.
Today FM, News Talk, everyone was running articles on this in Ireland. I mean, that's a lot of interest to generate. Like, he's an established name in Ireland. Like, I mean, as you know, he pops into Off the Ball, News Talk, and kind of lends himself to stuff like that. He was obviously featured heavily in the Notorious documentary, yeah, stuff like that. His story is intertwined with that initial run. He was the guy. If there was one guy that everyone was like, he should have got his shot in the UFC, it was Chris.
Yeah.
Joe, outside of the people who went at that time, I think he was the one.
The one that.
The most glaring omission.
Yeah.
Say.
Oh, yeah, without doubt. Unfortunately,
it did become nearly a story of his career, right? Because then every fight.
So,
we were
he
like,
was so close.
Are we going to. Yeah. Are we going to. You know.
But yeah, it would be wonderful. And I think, you know, we're not really going to have a huge amount of Irish fighters in the card. I think we can accept that. We've mentioned probably 2-3 tops maximum. Including Joseph Duffy. You know, Joe's obviously a no-brainer. I think Joe's going to get on that card regardless.
Oh yeah, you'd think so.
So him, you know, obviously we were talking about Reese, if he makes an impressive statement, and Chris, and yeah, you know, you can't beat stories like that. And I think, you know, you mentioned it there, the mainstream interest, that says to me that the UFC should really take this seriously and seriously consider doing this if Chris wins his Cage Warriors return. It would be a no-brainer for me. The traction has been huge amongst Chris, and you know, we talked about Paul as well. You know, imagine having Paul, Chris, Joe. They're all big names, very popular guys.
Yeah, I mean, how important is it for Ian Dean to pull another masterstroke and get a good opponent here for Chris on April 18th?
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. It's vital. I'm sure Chris will want it. You know, Chris is one of these guys. I think it's fair to say that he's never really backed down from anyone. He's fought the best of the best in Europe, and you know, whether it be at 185 or, you know, 205, he'll go in there and give it his all. But like, I'm sure Chris is sort of in a weird way going, fuck, I hope they give me someone shit so I can make a fucking statement and an impressive statement.
That's what he was saying. He said to me, he goes, I just hope they get me the bouncer from down the road who has a cold.
But, you know, that's not going to happen. I think, yeah, Chris is...
That fella's already booked.
Yeah. I think Chris, and knowing Chris, you know, he's going to want a good test, and it's really about making a statement, I think, for Chris.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and everyone should check out, I watched it just before I came out today, the timeline Esther and Casey have put together for UFC 248. It's fantastic, just basically lining up the careers of Romero and Stylebender.
Look.
Yeah, always a great feature ahead of these big pay-per-views. I'm actually really looking forward to these fights. I'm at a wedding this weekend.
Where's the wedding on?
At Farnham Estate, my good friend Thomas Cryan. Yeah, he is getting married to the lovely Elaine McGuire.
Oh, God, I thought you were going to say you're Elaine for him. I was like, oh.
No, he's had on the line longer than I've had on the line, right, in fairness, fair, so we let him away with it. I'm looking forward to it. I love...
Stop saying you're looking forward to it.
I can't wait.
You're not really.
I actually can't wait for this.
Fucking hate weddings.
Do you? I can't wait for this one.
Stop it. Stop the lights.
Got myself a new jacket.
Did you?
Snazzy.
But that's what I mean. They cost you a fortune. Like, you're looking at 1500 max nearly for a wedding.
Look,
these
man,
days.
That's not to me, man.
Of course it's not.
Fucking wipe me arse with 1500.
Fucking ages.
But, yeah, also, my friend Adrian Dolan is in this.
Yeah,
Hell Week
me,
thing.
You're showing me clips for you and on here. Very
show
funny.
Him a few videos of the man in action, off screen, shall we say. But yeah, have a look at him there. It will have been on by the time this comes out. I think it airs on Mondays. But go to the RTE player and watch my good friend Ado, a judo black belt, have his way with a few people in this kind of fight scenario they put him in. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better guy to go in there. My God, what a man. I'm very much looking forward
number
to
number 11
to he's number 11 not what's your name, Dolan? No, it's not, it's number 11. I might just call him number 11 from now on.
Dude, that's
he
hilarious.
Smacked the shit out of me though, probably. He's always been jealous of me curls.
It's been a wild week.
It has indeed.
I'm tired now.
Are you working all weekend? Are you gonna have to play mad kind of shimmy the fights in somewhere?
I think so. Sunday night probably, by the sounds of it. I'll have to have I'll watch UFC. I'd say I probably will.
And,
well, maybe not, actually.
We can start trying to book the show tomorrow again.
Yeah.
It's becoming a week-long event. Isn't
it? Fucking is. Like, you know, fucking Wednesday, you know, it started again. We did a little, obviously.
We have a little.
Trying to get
a powwow. Trying to think about different things.
Yeah, and you know, it just can be awkward sometimes trying to organise interviews, but we got them over the line. So
yeah, make sure you just keep on asking Darren Till to come on Eurobash in his comments on that.
Yeah.
Be nice, though. Because we're going to have to take the hide.
When are you getting back to us, Darren? I'll do an interview with Smaller Mates. And fucking 6 weeks later. Oh, well, sorry, mates.
He's meant to have been on every 12, episode of Eurobash for
ever.
The last 30.
Yeah. So, nah.
Looking forward to finally making that happen.
Yeah, I'll get on to him again. But listen, we don't promise anything with Darren anymore. I think
and he certainly doesn't promise anything.
Yeah. He's a gas man. He's funny as fuck.
You got it more of the hustle.
Yeah, he's gassed, dude. Is Darren. But
Liverpool
lost. That was great. Sorry, just thinking.
3-0, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but a mad one there.
Yeah. Imagine if they bottled it. They couldn't. Possibly.
They can't. Just stop holding out on that. Yeah. You need to give up and just...
It's going
to
be a dark day.
It's just get over it now. Like,
my
just
my Man United drew with Molly McCann's Everton yesterday. 1-1. Yeah.
What did you think of that?
De Gea, what the fuck, man?
Do you know what? VAR just fucking ruined football. I can't watch it.
It's terrible. It's
so shit, man.
It's all right in Serie A. They do it differently.
My dad has a theory. It's all to do with putting ads on. He's like, soon they're going to go to a VAR break. As soon as they do the symbol, they're going to go up a 30-second break for Gillette or something.
Yeah.
He thinks it's all an American employee. And Jesus, like, when you look at American football and the amount of ads and NBA and stuff.
I don't know how our American friends watch TV. It's punishing in the States trying to watch anything. It is. This game is brought to you by Snickers.
Unless I'm on it. It's great.
Stuff like there's ads every fucking 5 minutes. Like it's fucking punishing. But have you not noticed here, though, on all our shows, the ads are getting longer and longer. There's up to 6 minutes now, some ads. They've been Love Island's on or something like that.
Don't watch that, bollocks me.
I did watch it. I'm an unapologetic Love Island fan. So go for
it. A lot of people are.
Yeah, people. There's loads of people are.
What is the new one on Netflix everyone's talking about? Love is Blind. Is that the same idea?
Don't know what the fuck that is.
Unless Cilla Black's on it, you can get fucked.
There's my watching for the night later on after I'm finished putting this together.
It's going to be a sweaty evening for Noel McGrath.
Jesus Christ. That is disgusting.
Right, that lads. Disgusting. We love yous loads.
Big thanks to everyone.
I'm going to try and not make it 3 hangovers in a row because I've been very bad, haven't I?
I had a fair few yesterday, but I'm actually all right.
No, I'm in a heap.
I'm a little bit anxious. That's for reasons that you know about. So,
his Mickey fell off.
Yeah. But nah, it is. It's tough. The grind is. But listen, we need to fucking blow off steam as well. We can't be fucking locked in front of a computer fucking all year, you know, or all week.
Locked as in drank a bottle of vodka.
Well, you're fucking that sake shit you gave me. I fucking necked the bloody bottle.
What's it called? Wushu? Omishu?
Look how much you drank. Look how much
this
feckin'
is great gear. Elaine loved this
rocket
stuff,
fuel. It's absolute rocket fuel.
With the ice
fuel.
In, it's beautiful. Whoa.
It is, man. But I was pretty drunk now after drinking.
We were very proud
shit.
when we saw you whipping open that bottle. Yeah. We nearly celebrated. We're like, yeah,
he's done it.
Do it, baby.
So no, it was good stuff.
Omishu.
It's tastier than I thought it would be.
It's plum, isn't it?
I don't know what it is. It's just sweet.
Yeah. It's a good whack off.
It's nice with the ice in it.
With the ice, man, I'm telling you. It's a good percentage as well. I think it's like 30 odd or something. Not too sure.
It's fucking stronger than that, dude. It's fucking rocket fuel. It's like petrol, like.
Well,
no wonder my fucking arse is sore.
Yeah, that's what that is. But look, we love his loads. It's a big weekend of fights. Enjoy them. I'm going to be sneaking off from Tomo's wedding. I'm sorry, Tomo, to watch a few fights. I apologise.
Thanks to all the lads for stopping by on the show this week as well.
Big thanks to Paul Felder, Joseph Duffy, Jack Cartwright, Chris Fields. Let's get them all in fucking Dublin. Who cares?
Yeah.
Let's do it live.
Like, definitely. I think that would be great if we could get all those guys on.
Love yous and big kisses. See yous next week.
Good luck.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.